from the high desert of the great American Southwest, I bid you once again good evening, or good morning as the case may be. In my time zone, Halloween continues, and so, of course, Ghost to Ghost continues as well. Our annual trek through the weird, the bizarre, the strange, and the true. Ghost stories. That's what we tell. It is completely caller-driven. We don't have guests. You are the ones who get to tell the stories. And it generally is all the scarier because of that. Last night was certainly no exception, and I suspect tonight will be a continuation of that very fine tradition done over many, many years on this program now. And so we'll get to all that. A couple of announcements up front. This was kind of cool. Just got it. Dear Art, just thought you'd like to know, tonight, Halloween night, Art Bell's stock on the Rogue Market reached $35,000 per share. In fact, it closed at $35,000. That's midnight Eastern time. This art is a solid position for a terrific climb tomorrow. Just last Monday, which was Black Monday for Wall Street, you announced your stock had, on the same day, passed the $30,000 mark, and I predicted this week it would go to $35,000. And as of this moment, or the closing of the Rogue Market, it has done exactly that. So you watch now, over the weekend and into next week, she's headed toward $40,000. You get a chance to go to the Rogue Market, jump on over and make a mint in Rogue dollars. How do you find the Rogue Market? You go to my website at www.artbell.com, and you will see it on the left-hand side, the link to the Rogue Market. Just feel free to jump on over. In addition, last night I put up a really strange picture from Strange Universe. In fact, I said it was going to be tonight the program covering the alien body that I've got on the website, the photo of the alien body, is going to be on Strange Universe Monday night. So I missed it by a day, or they moved it by a day, I think. And, in a lot of ways, that photograph more befits Halloween than it does an alien, I think. You look at that photograph, and there is something more horribly creature-like about it, something out of a bad dream here on Earth than you would find elsewhere. But it is represented to be the body of an alien, and the story will unfold Monday on Strange Universe. And also, this note up front, Hi Art, here is a report of a significant Halloween sighting from Reno, Nevada. My name is Jeremy, gives his whole name. I'll give it, Jeremy Dunn. I'm the board op here at KOH until midnight Friday nights. He says, I had a couple of listeners call to report a red light moving very slowly south of town. They tracked it for several minutes. I went outside and I saw it myself, as is my board op. I called the Reno Tahoe Airport, and guess what? They were getting calls on it. The tower saw it, and as a matter of fact, had it on radar, but did not know what it was. A departing flight reported the object to be at about 9,000 feet altitude. Thought you'd like to know, Jeremy, 73, is Jeremy, oh, he's a ham. Jeremy is also a ham. So there you go, a Halloween sighting of all things of a red light, noted even by radar up there as things continue to flash across our skies. Another very very good a Phoenix picture coming shortly. As a matter of fact, not of the original March 13th Phoenix lights, but of a recent UFO right over the city of Phoenix. What is it about Phoenix that's attracting UFOs? Linda will have a specific report on this one coming up this Sunday. At any rate, we launch into the world of the unseen shortly. And it's interesting, I was doing an interview, or did a sort of an off-the-cuff interview on KST in Sacramento earlier in the day. And since it is Halloween, they decided to call me and do a brief interview on Halloween. And I told the talk show host there, go ahead, give it a shot. Try it after the interview. I said it on the air, open your lines and don't laugh at people, don't scoff at them, and just watch what happens. And then I later got a fax and said, boy, were you right. Lines lit up and stayed lit up. Thanks. Now, why would ghost stories be important to hear beyond the obvious fun, the vicarious fun, I might add, of hearing somebody else scared out of their wits? Now, I say vicarious because that's really what it is, when it, at least for me, when it comes down to something really happening to you, as in me, then the vicarious part of it dies a little bit. And I found out the other night, scared the hell out of me during the Brad Steiger interview. I know that a lot of you heard it, but right in the middle of that interview, just as I finished a break and the music was fading and I took my headphones off to head off into the other room, something went on my door. And I mean, just like that. I don't even know that my mic was able to adequately reproduce the pounding sound that occurred on my door. Really, really loud. Not an outside door, no outside rattle, no rock, none of that baloney. This was something that pounded on my door to the degree that I'm sure had I been all the way turned around and seen it, the door would have rattled inward visibly. And so since I was already on the way up, I went right over and opened the door that quick. And there was nothing there. Now there are four possibilities in my home for such a sound. Three of them are kitty cats who were sound asleep on my bed. The fourth is my wife, who also, until I interrupted her, was sound asleep on our bed. So in other words, none of the four suspects had made the sound. So what pounded on my door at a decibel level that would cause Alfred Hitchcock, were he around, to raise his eyes in surprise? I have no idea. But I do know this. The vicarious part of it stopped like that, and the actual scary part of it began for me. It really was scary. So anyway, I will attempt to vicariously enjoy the ghost stories of all of you out there beginning shortly. Well, all right, we're about ready to get underway, though I do have a current situation here I suppose I should address. I just got this from John in Santa Barbara. Hi, Art. I know you're not on the air right now. It's 15 minutes before the show. I am in Santa Barbara. I live alone and just went into my bathroom to find the bottom of my shower, my tub, shower in the tub, red with what looks like blood. There is also a red stain of a handprint on the wall in the shower. Oh, I've been here about a year now and have never had anything or seen anything like this before. I don't really know what to do. I'm shaking now. I'm not sure I'm going to stay in this place tonight. I was wondering if, when you get on the air, you might be able to ask your listeners for advice. I've tried to call my landlady, but there is no answer at her place, of course. Right now I'm thinking of heading to a motel. What would you do? I wish you a good and safe Halloween. I'm sure not going to forget this for a long time. Hope the motel has a radio so I can hear your show. Well, listen, my friend. If your shower is covered with blood, and if there really is a bloody hand stain on the shower wall, my most sincere advice to you would be to call 911. Before concluding that you are merely having a Halloween prank, I think that I would get hold of the police. And they will quickly enough tell you if you have blood on your wall, if you have blood in your shower. And if you do, it is better that you would call 911 than your landlady or somebody else. Believe me. All right, now to the phones and the unexpected. Whatever it is going to be tonight, here it comes. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good evening.
Oh.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm in Cape Junction, Oregon.
Cape Junction, Oregon, all right.
Yeah, my mother was a faith healer, and I've seen a lot of things over the years. I'm 46 years old. They don't scare me anymore, but I've had several of them happen. One of them that really sticks out in my mind, several years ago when my would-be wife and I were together, we were at my mother's house sleeping on the floor, and I woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I seen this mist at the end of the bed, and it was a gray mist. And so I lit up a cigarette, and I'm watching it, and it's moving back and forth, and it looked like the Grim Reaper is what it looked like. And my wife woke up, seen it, hollered, and it went away. A week later, she become very ill, and we took her to the doctor. They said it was an inflamed ovary. I took her home. We took her back again in another week, and they said it was stomach flu. And finally, something just told me to take her to another doctor, and her appendix broke. It had been broke for 2 weeks, and she almost died.
Oh, that's much too long. 2 weeks is much too long.
Yeah, well, the doctors told her it was an inflamed ovary or stomach flu, but I got worried. She was looking really bad.
Well, she was lucky to be alive at all.
Well, yeah, some kind of antibiotics in her system formed a bag around it, and that's the only thing that saved her. But there's been several incidents. I've made several predictions. 9 of them come true, the ones that I made, and it's scary sometimes.
All right, my friend, thank you very much for the call. The human body is an amazing thing, far more amazing than the scientists are able to yet discern. In some cases, the human body is capable of protecting against what otherwise would be a fatal disease, and there are no exceptions. Sometimes things just cure themselves. Cancer, AIDS, to the point that AIDS can no longer, you know, the HIV virus can no longer be detected. People have cured themselves literally from the deathbed. Daniel Brinkley is capable healing himself. He's proven that to me and to a lot of other people as well. It can be done. A miracle? I don't know. What do you think? First time caller line, you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening.
Where, pray tell, are you, sir?
I'm Samuel, and I'm on the island of Kauai.
The island of Kauai, the beautiful island of Kauai. Yes, sir.
It is. Okay, I got one that should freak you out. I was about 6 years old and laying in bed, and we had a clock radio, and I know it was like about 4:07, maybe 4:08 in the morning, and I just woke up for some reason. I have no idea why, and I had this really kind of creepy feeling, and I looked up, and there was, of course, I didn't know it at the time, but I know today it was it certainly looked like the Grim Reaper. It was the black hood, couldn't see the face, and I just freaked.
That might have been the devil.
The devil?
The devil.
Well, why do you say that?
Oh, well, it just might have been. I mean, generally, when people talk about visitations by guides or angels that are going to take them, you know, from this life into the next, they are light creatures, or they're wearing white clothing. Now, if your guy had on black clothing, kind of a men in black, MIB from below, you know, That, you know, I'm not, now look, I'm not trying to worry you. I'm just saying that you might want to review the way you're living your life.
Well, no, no. Let me finish the story first off.
All right.
Okay, so I kind of freaked, didn't quite like the character that I saw in front of me, so I closed my eyes, kind of pulled the covers up over me, and I had this the tingly kind of sparkly sensation of, I don't know what you would call it, energy or something or other, and I closed my eyes, and a couple seconds, or I don't know how long it was, a minute, I opened my eyes again, and I knew I was awake, and I looked up, and I could see our hallway ceiling passing in front of me, up above me, and I went, what the heck is going on here? And I was freaking floating, man, down the, I wasn't walking because I was on my back, and I'm cruising down our hallway, and I certainly closed my eyes again because I did not like what I was experiencing.
Would have been a good opportunity to change some light bulbs if you'd thought that.
So I closed my eyes again, and we had another clock radio in the digital, you know what I mean, in the living room.
Yes.
And I opened my eyes again, and I'm laying on the floor in my living room underneath our coffee table with, I could see the clock radio, the digital lit up, and like 1 minute had passed from when I could see the clock when I was in the bedroom and I first experienced this. And so I was completely wide awake, and I, needless to say, I didn't move. I slept underneath our coffee table until the sun come up. But,
Well, so then you don't really know, do you, what occurred? You don't really know?
Well, of course, I'm 6 years old. How would I know what the, I still don't know to this day what the heck happened. Mm-hmm. But
you must have been a bad six-year-old. You must have really done something terrible.
No, I was a bad 20-year-old. I was a good 6-year-old.
All right. Thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome.
A bad 20-year-old. Yeah, we were all bad 20-year-olds, weren't we? You know, just, you know, there's some way, somehow, that I suppose I have to hope that God judges people at a latter age, and that may want to be one of the bad things about dying at 20. I mean, think back to your own life, you know. You'd have died at 20 and gone through a full life review, short as it would have been at that point. At the age of 20, you would look a whole lot different than you would at 40, 50, 60, 70 years old. Think about it. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Hi.
How you doing, Lord?
I'm doing all right. Where are you?
It's in New Orleans.
New Orleans, yes, sir.
We're getting better, too.
I know. New Orleans really is a place where this kind of stuff flourishes.
Yeah, and the one I'm going to tell you, it has something to do with Marie Laveau.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's a real spooky story, but it actually happened. I kid you not. And this is how what happened. I had some friends that were in a play at UNO. It was like a teleplay film. And one of the pictures I had was the girl who played Marie Laveau. And I had dug them up a couple of months ago.
Dug them up. All right. On that note, we're going to have to pause.
Okay.
Because we're at breakpoint here. Now, do you want to hold on and we'll let you unwind your story? And it's...
All right. I got so many stories from being down here, but this one...
This is the one we... That's what we want. The very best story you've got, and it sounds like that's what's just ahead. As we do every year, this is Ghost to Ghost AM.
Listening to a rebroadcast of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Now, back to our wild card line. You're back on the air again.
How you doing, Art?
All right.
I'll just recap it for a little bit. Actually, I was looking for some important papers, you know, and I was scrummaging around boxes and stuff, and I was digging in this one box, and I came across a picture of this girl who acted in a movie about Marie Laveau. And, you know, you're an aficionado for exotic girls and stuff.
Oh, yes.
You know, and this picture was beautiful. And I said, I had to have it. You know, I just asked her if I could have it. And she said, yeah. She was surprised that somebody wanted a picture of her. So anyway, I said, I'm going to put this on my wall. And so I took it and I put it on the wall next to a poster. Okay, and it was, you know, right behind a lamp, but you could see it when you walked in the room. And, so, you know, that night I went to bed, woke up the next morning.
Oh, darn, I was going to guess she came to you in the night.
Well, let me finish. Let me finish.
All right.
It totally blew me away. I was getting up out of bed, and the lamp was still on, right? And there was a reflection on the TV, on the dark TV screen, and the reflection was about 6 inches by 6 inches.
And?
And it was some mad character, a devious-looking smile. It wasn't me. It was coming from the wall where I placed this picture of the girl that played Marie Laveau. And by just moving, putting the picture in a certain way with the poster behind it and whatnot,
yes,
this mad image came out on the screen of the TV. It was just a reflection. And I said, my God, what is that, you know? And I got up and it disappeared, you know? And I said, man, this is strange. And I turned the lamp off and there was no reflection there, you know? And so that night, the same thing, you know, I got the lamp on, I turn off the TV, and the reflection comes back of this mad-looking person, devious-looking face.
Yes.
I'm going, man, this is crazy, you know? And what I did was, eventually, I just moved the picture to another spot, and the thing went away.
Well, I guess one could conclude that you were getting a just sort of a distorted reflection of her in the television, or it may be the reflection of her in any other object would be a creature that you would not want to meet in the middle of the night. I really thought your story was going somewhere else. I thought perhaps in the morning you would have awakened with the need for a cigarette, though you don't even smoke, or something like that. In other words, she came to you in the midst of the night, but no. East of the Rockies, you're on the air on Ghost to Ghost AM. Hello.
How you doing, Art?
Just fine.
I'm from Gulfport, Florida.
Gulfport, Florida. Okay.
Yeah. All the way across the continent from you.
Yes.
It's
a little continent, though, now.
Well, that's true, especially nowadays.
Yes.
I wanted to tell you about something that happened in about 1977, 1978.
First person to you?
To me.
Okay.
At the time, I was working at O'Hare Airport. I was working security there, my first job. And I was living in Chicago with four other roommates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all guys. That way, we didn't have to worry about, you know, doing laundry and stuff. You know, everybody's stuff was all over the place, and we didn't give a care. So... You know, I worked late nights.
Communal trash.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I think I've got the picture.
Typical bachelor pad, you know.
Mm.
I worked late nights predominantly, but one night, it was Halloween night in, like I said, 77 or 78, mm-hmm. I worked in the evening from 4 to 12. And when I got home, now these guys... You know, the other three guys had been sort of dabbling in the occult. They'd been, they'd gotten a bunch of books on demonology and stuff.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Your roommates were doing this, huh?
Yeah, they were doing that.
Now, that's a red flag right away. Didn't that worry you a little bit?
Not really, because, I have my own beliefs, and I'm not really that...
I mean, you weren't worried about ending up on a sacrifice altar some night with the three of them staring at you?
No, not really.
All right.
These guys were a little bit nuts, but they weren't that bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have... I would like to think that I would have...
What is your first name?
Eric.
I mean, Eric, they would be looking down at you saying, Eric, We gave you every opportunity to join us. We really wish you had. But now we need you for a higher purpose. And then there would be this long, jagged, twisted knife. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All
and
all
at any rate, the
sacrifice.
That's right. So none of that was true.
No, none of that. None of that. But I came home, and I found that they had gone into the basement. Now, this was a big, you know, long apartment building, you know, two blocks long. It was a zigzag architecture, sort of like an L-shaped pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And in our section of the building, we had exclusive use of the basement. And I came home, and I looked around, and I didn't see him anywhere, and I happened to notice that one of their books was out on the table. So I went down looking for him in the basement, and they'd gone ahead and made the protective circle of sanctified sand, and
yes,
they had the pentacle on the inside of the circle of sand.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys was doing some sort of a summoning, attempting to summon a demon.
Yes.
And like I said, I'm not exactly the most believing individual in the world. I've got my, you know, I've got my own religious beliefs, but the demonology and that, I sort of...
That's okay. Here they were trying to summon up something with big teeth, and...
And right in the middle of it, I made the comment, if there is a devil, give us a sign.
Oh, wait a minute. That makes you part of it, you know.
Well, yeah, I guess so, but at the same time, I was being a sarcastic little schnuck.
Peer pressure, I guess.
Well, no, I was being sarcastic.
So you said, fine, if there's a devil, let's have a sign, and what happened?
Well, inside the basement, far corner, was a footlocker. Okay, old World War I wooden footlocker.
Right.
And inside that footlocker was a radio. It's funny, you'd mentioned the transistor radio earlier.
Right.
This was a transistor radio. It had been in a fire. It was one of the other guys. It was. It had been his brother's, and he had stuck it inside the footlocker after it had burned. Why, I don't know, but he did. And it was one of those things where the footlocker itself was damaged. Nobody could get into it without destroying it because his younger brother had gone ahead and, pulled a practical joke on him and stuck some super glue in there.
Yep, that'll do it. All right, so we've got to get to the punchline
right here.
Right.
The key had broken off. Nobody could get in.
Right.
That radio had not worked in I don't know how long. And immediately after I said, give us a sign.
Yes.
That radio started playing.
Well,
she is a devil woman with evil on her mind.
It started playing that.
That's correct.
Do you understand the implications of that for your soul?
Yeah.
That's a very nice laugh you have, but I'm being very serious. Do you
understand? I understand what you're saying.
Are you ready for the ride?
There won't be. There won't be.
Uh-huh.
I know where I'm going.
Do you? Yeah. Have you ever been in an elevator in like a 50 or 60 a story building and, you press the down thing and it's like you lose some of your weight and you can feel yourself lightening up as it goes down?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's nothing compared to the ride you're going to take.
Well, maybe.
Just having fun with you. But that is not good. You do not, particularly in a situation of a circle of safety, protection, a pentagram, three other guys, ask for a sign from the devil, and then obviously get one and not be somewhat concerned about your ultimate destination, and it won't be on L-1011. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Well, hello, Art. How are you?
I'm fine.
I'm really glad you took this call. I want to tell you something that happened to me about 23 years ago.
Where are you now?
Okay, this is Lady of Kinnick. I'm in Kinnick, Alaska.
Oh, no kidding. Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful. Okay.
And this happened back when I wasn't living right. And
you mean you were
I was not living right.
living a little on the wild side, fast lane, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it was worse than that. It was down in Fort Lauderdale, down from the Broward General Hospital. There was this house, and they went and they turned it into a haunted house. And it had, like, all these exhibits and booths and everything.
Oh, you mean like a commercial haunted house?
Yeah, it was a commercial one.
Right.
Well, what had happened is my father was killed on Thanksgiving Day before I was born. And I wasn't born until 3 days after Christmas. So
killed as in murdered, you mean?
No, he went in an airplane crash.
Okay.
And they didn't find his body till I was like 6 months old.
Right.
And my auntie, who's was very psychic, it's on my mother's side of the bloodline, that's their problem. And there was this pair of wooden shoes that he had brought back from when he was in the military, and he gave them to my auntie, and she had them in this, like a china closet where my uncle had gone all over the world and collected all these things, and I always wanted them wooden shoes. And she passed over, and the shoes came to me, and I had them. I was living in this apartment, and there was a television set that had not worked in years. And I went and had a bedspread put over it, and I had this big mirror to where you kind of see yourself laying on the bed. Like I said, I wasn't living right back in them days.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I know.
Anyway, so, yes.
Anyway, what had happened is I went to this haunted house exhibit, and the very last exhibit before you go out the door, there was this plaster of Paris skull, and it looked really, really real. And I reached over and I grabbed it, and I put it in this big handbag I had,
right.
And I booked out with it, and I had this thing for a couple of months. I moved to this apartment, I took the skull, and I had it on top of this old TV, which had not been used in years. There was no plugs on the wall. I just had it like a table. I guess you could call it an altar.
My mama told me to be careful about chicks who carry skulls.
Oh, man, it gets worse.
Okay.
And I had this skull sitting on top of this TV, and I had a wooden shoe on each side of it, and the mirror was behind it, and I had this crocheted green thing, like, hanging up wispy over the mirror. And I went to sleep, and at this time, my son was just a little itty-bitty, just a couple of months old. And I went into the sleep, and I kept hearing this voice, and it told me to wake up. And it's like I had a really hard time waking up. And when I woke up, this is gospel. Just like on them biker shirts where you see the skull with the flames shooting out of the side.
Yes.
With no ashtrays, there was no cigarettes.
Yes.
From the side of this skull, there was these flames that were just absolutely shooting out like there was a blowtorch turned on.
Really?
And the inside of the shoes, like where it would go in the inside of your feet, was just absolutely charred. So I got up. I took my son, I set him outside the apartment on the grass. I went into the bathroom because all I had was a shower, and I dumped the diaper bucket, and I got a bucket of water, and I went ahead and poured it over this skull and everything.
You had to put the skull out?
You betcha. Let me tell you something. This is going to blow your mind.
Okay.
When I walked outside and let the smoke come out of the apartment,
yes.
These two little girls that I knew that were teenagers, they worked at Burger King off of Sunrise Boulevard, this was like 23 years ago, they came back to visit me. And they asked me, like, wow, what's going on? I said, walk inside the apartment and tell me if you see anything.
Uh-huh.
And they walked in. And they came out, and they were as white as sheets. I said, what did you see? Art, there in the mirror was the most perfect picture of me asleep on the bed, done in smoke. And I want you to know, you talk about getting up and moving out that day, I was history.
Is that when you changed your life?
No, I didn't get baptized till 1988.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's why I really wanted to talk to Harlot the other night.
We're going to replay the show with Harlot tomorrow night, serving fair notice to my affiliates. That was one freaky show.
Do you think she's listening right now, or do you think she's busy?
If I had to guess, I'd say yes.
May I say one thing to her?
You may.
Harlot, if you're listening, I want you to know that when you went and summoned Lucifer, who's actually in the lower heavens right now, to talk to God about having your son to be in the satanic religion.
She didn't talk to God about having her
son. She talked to Satan.
She talked to Satan and delivered her son
to deliver
Satan.
Her son to where
That's
he would
right.
be into the craft to
That's
be
right.
A priest for Satan.
Yes.
Well, that baby's home safe with Jesus.
Well,
I guess the Lord is a merciful God to spare that child that kind of life.
But how do you know that?
Because it's a little itty teeny little baby, and she talked to Satan about having him to become in the faith and to be dedicated to Satan to grow up to be a priest.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby ain't here.
All right, I thank you for the call. I'm not as sure of that. I have no way of being as sure. By the way, my all-time favorite person in scary movies, beyond any shadow of any doubt, is now Christopher Walken. I saw Prophecy, and I just had the opportunity to see Prophecy 2, and I'm telling you right now, there is no more natural, evil, scary, perfect person for the part of an archangel gone bad than Christopher Walken. The guy is positively eerie. He's absolutely incredible. Okay, we're going to break here at the bottom of the hour. Tonight we shall devote to, well, what we're doing, ghost stories. We do that this year, kind of ghost to ghost plus. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, dial Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Well, that takes care of it, except for the international line. And I am encouraged tonight to give it out. I've been getting so many international emails. Boy, they just have been flooding in. I got a nice one from Scotland earlier tonight. Somebody said, man, you've got a lot of listeners here in Scotland. They don't do the kind of show you do here. And so I thought I would tell everybody in Scotland and England and Japan and all over the world that we have one of the first true international toll-free line that AT&T ever constructed. It's toll-free from anywhere in the world. It's absolutely remarkable, actually. Let me tell you how to call us from anywhere in the world. Be a fun night to get a bunch of international calls, wouldn't it? So here we go. You get the AT&T operator on the line. She's not hard to find. You call your local operator and just ask for the AT&T operator and say, I would like to call in the United States, toll-free, 800-893-0903. From anywhere outside this great nation, we are borderless on this radio program. That's 1-800, no, not 1. Actually, you don't dial the 1. You just have the AT&T operator dial 800-893-0903. And from wherever you are in the world, it will be absolutely toll-free. By the way, my boss, Alan Corbett, is preparing to wing his way to Great Britain. And one of the things he's going to be doing there is consummating the deal with a talk radio network in Britain to carry the program. So we are going to spread our wings a little bit, and we are, for at least a period of the evening, going to be live throughout the British Isles, Scotland, and who knows where else we're heard in Europe. But we're going to get on a radio network there. It's going to be a lot of fun, particularly with the toll-free line. So once again, if you're outside the country, scare up an AT&T operator and have her call 800-893-0903 from any place in the world, and we will whisk you in toll-free. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. My name's Sherry, and I'm from Kansas City.
Hi, Sherry.
Okay, this happened back in 1980. I was dating this really neat city councilman, and he had bought an older home, beautiful old home, and he converted this big attic into a beautiful big bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And it must have been, I don't know, 30 feet long on this one side, and that whole side was nothing but a big closet, huge, long closet. You know how you are about closets?
Oh, yes.
So am I. Now, up until then, I never believed in this stuff. So he was asleep one night, and I hadn't been, but I fell asleep, and a knocking woke me up.
Mm.
Didn't stir him at all. So I kind of opened my eyes and was looking, you know, and I looked over at the closet, and out popped this head.
A head?
Down to the shoulders.
Oh, Lord. A head out of the closet to the shoulders?
Down to her shoulders. She popped her head out, and she had short brown kind of wavy hair and a flowery dress on.
Yeah?
And I stared, you know, and I kind of froze, and I just stared and looked, and then she turned her head and looked at me, and we kind of eye to eye, you know, and she went back in the closet, and I just, I woke him up. I said, Ed, wake up, I just saw the most strange thing. I know I saw it. And he said, what was it? What'd she look like? I told him, he says, oh, don't worry about her. He said, she's real nice. He said, when I built this room, I saw her when I finished the closet. He said, she walked in there. But what we figured out, what he said why she was there, was this house was built by her father when she got married, and the man left her, and she committed suicide in the attic.
Great. And so she was in your closet.
Yes, and she lived in the closet, and she liked him because he said, don't worry about her, she's really nice.
Uh-huh.
Well, I told him, she can have him.
You know? So that was the end of that, huh?
No, I got out of that deal.
I don't blame you at all. Thank you very much for the call. I don't like open closets at night. Now, I've never had anything peek out of my closet, and if I did, my intense dislike of open closets at night would quickly convert to, I'm leaving this closet for somebody else. I'd be out of here. There is no way, there's no way on God's green earth that I would go to sleep with a closet open or closed from which somebody had peeked their head and shoulders out. No way. No way. On my international line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi there. Where are you?
In Vancouver, Canada.
All right, Vancouver, welcome to the program. Do you have a ghost story for us?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Turn
your radio off, that's important.
Oh, right, okay.
You gotta do that up in Vancouver.
Okay. When I was young, my father bought a house, and it was built in the 1920s. And this guy gave it to him for a really good price, and so he bought it. And 2 weeks later, the guy came back and begged him to have the house back. And so he should have explained to him more about what happened in the house before he had sold it to him. So anyway, my father said, no, this is our first house, we're going to keep it. And apparently, what this guy told my father, and he never said anything to the family for years till later, was that there were 3 generations living in the house. They were from the West Indies, and they were practicing voodoo. And basically, he said he wanted to buy the house back from him, and that he shouldn't have let a young family buy the house in the first place, knowing the history. So anyway, my father thought, well, you know, we're just going to live with it, and went on with that. And
he accepted it. I would have assumed? I would have assumed that the guy somehow had seller's remorse, or somehow, you know, wanted the house back. And a good story of a haunting in the house is a great way to scare somebody to sell it back to you.
Maybe that's what my dad thought.
Yeah.
You know, because he was a pretty skeptical person when it came to this kind of thing.
Sure.
But then a lot of things happened all through the years when we had lived in the house. A lot of weird things happened. And in fact, it led to it got so bad that we'd had 3 or 4 priests come to the house and bless the house. And there was one time when it was so bad, one priest was summoned to come to the house. And
well, what could have happened in that house to be so bad that you would summon a priest?
Just a lot of different things. We had a lot of religious paraphernalia on the walls, like crosses and pictures of Jesus and things like that.
Yes.
And we had this one cross that kept dropping to the floor. And there was no way that that could happen because of the way it was hung on the wall. It was right above the basement door.
Mm-hmm.
And that kept falling. And my dad thought, geez, you know, why does this thing keep coming off the wall? That happened, and my mom had a lot of weird things happen where she'd be sleeping and she'd feel a tremendous weight on top of her.
Oh, yes.
Couldn't move.
Oh, yes.
And it became so commonplace, I didn't think anything of it when she would call out in the middle of the night and say, pass me my rosary or pass me the Bible, which she'd keep on her nightstand, but she was paralyzed. She couldn't move. So I'd come and give this to her, and whatever it was left.
Uh-huh.
And it was always targeting her, and I thought, well, you know, maybe it's targeting her because she's, you know, she's always sick. So maybe she's weak in some way.
Sure, I think they go after the weak.
Yeah, so things like that used to go on, and my dad said certain parts of the house were always really cold, and we noticed it too. Things like that. And there was just a lot of things like this going on all the time, weird things. We'd hear footsteps on the basement steps. And there's a man who, before we moved in, hung himself in the bath in the bedroom downstairs.
Oh, this house just has a great reason. All right, so anyway, what happened?
But anyway, when the third or fourth time we'd called a priest over the years, one time when these things were occurring more often, he came, and it was a different priest this time. And he got out of his car, and my dad came and opened the front door and saw him arrive, and he was going to greet him. And he wouldn't come over to the house. He wouldn't even step across the street onto the pavement that was out front of our house. He said he felt something that was so bad to the house, he didn't even want to enter
right.
Come onto our lawn.
Right.
And my dad came down the stairs, and I was standing in the doorway watching. The priest was apologizing, saying, sorry, you know, I'm going to have to send somebody else because whatever is there, I can feel it. It's quite bad, and it's, he goes, I can't handle this, and he left. He was scared. He didn't want to come in the house.
Now that's really bad. I mean, a priest arrives to do something for the house, and it's so bad that he leaves?
He left. So we had this other guy. He sent him out, and he felt very bad. He was apologizing a lot. And he even phoned back a few times to apologize. He felt really badly about leaving us there.
I understand. It's kind of like a doctor getting up and walking away from some guy who's bleeding on the street, you know?
Yeah. So we had things like that going on all the time. And I don't know. It just seemed to continue. And then one day when everyone was older, when the children weren't children anymore, it seemed to have just went away. So,
well, it may, thank you very much, it may have been the children that brought it in the first place. Particularly teenage girls, I don't know why, but particularly teenage girls have a propensity for attracting these things, or creating them, or summoning them, or being the source of them. We don't exactly know which is true, but we just know the phenomena tends to occur frequently around teenage girls. Now, why do you suppose that might be? Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello there.
How's it going?
Okay, where are you?
I am Waterloo, Illinois.
Waterloo, Illinois. Haha, I just played Waterloo.
Well, my buddy called last year, okay, for your ghost stories.
Yes.
and his parents had bought a sports complex. Okay? And when we were remodeling this place, we would feel very cold spots in this place, you know. So over the course of the year, you know, the place came up and running, and well, late at night when we would all show up there and, you know, skate around. It's a roller hockey rink.
Mm-hmm.
And we started hearing strange stuff, but one night we had come out of the locker room and went upstairs, and my friend Randy was downstairs in the locker room yet, and he come out, and well, first of all, he came up the steps, and he was white as a ghost. I was like, what's wrong with you? And he's telling me that he seen this black mass that looked like a man that was mm-hmm. 7 feet tall,
mm-hmm.
and it's not, you couldn't see through it, but it was just a black mass.
Very bad.
It walked towards an exit, or it went towards an exit away from him and went out the door. Okay? 3 weeks later, my friend Aaron is, this is his parents' place. He was, you know, locking up, and we weren't there. But he was going to the office door, and he seen something out of the back of his, you know, corner of his eye. And he turned around, and this thing was reaching for him. As soon as he turned around, it disappeared. I mean, he like jumped and blinked and it disappeared. But since then, there's only one person that besides them two that have seen it, and he's like a, you know, I know it's true because he like just plays there, you know, or, you know, he don't know us or nothing. He came up and he goes, I seen something really weird in the locker room downstairs. And he told us what it was. He explained it to us to a T.
Well, there you are. Yet another story of an entity. Now, as I told somebody earlier today, you can take any one of these stories, and I think you can rather easily dismiss them one way or another. You know, as you think them through, you can dismiss them. But collectively, you cannot take all the stories you're hearing. And the lines are, you know, as always, just absolutely loaded. And it could go on and on and on and on and on and on. And when you don't chuckle at people when they tell you a story, then people are unafraid to come forward as they hear others and tell their stories. So collectively, how can you possibly deny that these things must be true, that there must be something to it? Singly, perhaps. Collectively, not a chance. Not if you're an objective person and you listen carefully. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Fred from McKeesport, Pennsylvania.
Hi,
and
Fred.
Welcome back from vacation.
Thank you.
I got a ghost story for you that's confirmed by three different people. And first of all, I'd like to ask you a question. Did you get my letter about the MUFON report that I sent to you? With the triangle and the line on my thumb.
Yes, I did.
You did?
I did, thank you.
Okay, great. Well, here's my ghost story. Bought this house back in 1972. My mother did.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my family's religious practices is once they move into a new house, they call in the priest and have them bless
really?
The house. And
really?
You know, the whole ball of wax.
I have never done that.
Well, she did that.
I've
never, you know... I don't subscribe to that anymore myself, but she got remarried after my dad had died. He'd been dead about a year, and she remarried this bozo, and subsequently got divorced. But when she got remarried, she moved out.
Uh-huh.
So I decided, hey, I've got this whole house to myself. I'm moving into the master bedroom. Instead of my little tiny little bedroom that I had in the back part of the house.
How old were you?
I'd been back from Vietnam. I was 22.
So it was like party time. You've got your own place.
Oh, you know it.
All right.
So I'm listening to late night talk radio. Unfortunately, this is back in 1972. I don't think I was listening to you at that time. But I was listening to the radio. And I turned it off, and I was getting ready to go to bed. All of a sudden, you know, we have a lot of, at that time we had a lot of factories going on around here. I mean, the steel mills were all still going on, you know, great guns.
Sure.
But now they're all dead. But the thing of it is, I'm laying in bed, and I start hearing what sounded like breathing. Labored breathing.
Of course, labored.
And it sounded like it was, you know, somebody sounded like had pneumonia or emphysema or something like that.
Yes.
And I thought, well, okay, it's one of the factories, you know, and I'm just laying there, and all of a sudden, it starts getting louder and louder. Yeah, I'm right. And I'll tell you what, the adrenaline started pumping.
Of course it did.
And, you know, me being just back from Vietnam, I grabbed my .45 from underneath my pillow. I had it cocked and locked sitting on my chest, and I said, anybody that comes through this damn door is dead. And believe it or not, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but you're lying in bed. I've got a street light outside my window in the master bedroom.
We must hurry now. We're coming on
okay.
a break.
Yeah, the whole room got really, really dark. The whole room got really, really dark, and all of a sudden I started out of pressure pushing on my body.
Right.
I mean, pushing me into the mattress like it was almost like I could not breathe.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, I got the hell out of that room. I have never been back in that room. I will not sleep in that room. When my mother was still married, her son-in-law and wife come over and stayed at our house because they were living in the other house. And he confirmed something in the house. And this guy was a CIA analyst. I mean, we're talking, you know, black suit guy. And after my mother, her sister died.
About 10 seconds.
Okay, she took care of her sister, her niece, and come over. And her niece only spent one night in the house and then boogied. She would not spend another night in this house.
Yet another haunted house. I guess the party was canceled. Oh, boy. Ghost stories from the high desert. This is Ghost to Ghost AM.
And now, back to the best of Art Bell.
Back to the phones we go, and the ghost stories continue. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi.
Cindy calling from Salt Lake.
It's interesting, Cindy. Apparently, you just had a snowstorm in Salt Lake. Is that correct?
We had one last Friday.
All right. Well, I've got an article from the Salt Lake Tribune that says, the storm started with a bang, of thunder that started and scared people all across Salt Lake City in the valley.
Yes.
And then a snowstorm.
Yep. I have never heard such thunder in my life. We thought it was an earthquake.
Yeah, I've got the article here, and it's strange you should call. And you know the picture. I'm going to hold it up on my. My studio cam and let everybody see it, but I've got the newspaper picture, and it shows this witch with a broom about halfway up a pole with all the snow below, you know, trying to get away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
It's
anyway.
It's a little strange around here.
Uh-huh.
Well, this whole story happened in 1981. Four of my friends and I were coming home from California from a graduation trip, a high school graduation trip. Coming home to Salt Lake, we were leaving Palm Springs in the night because it was so hot. It's about 120 during the day, so we decided to travel at night. We were on the road outside of Palm Springs. I can't remember exactly where we were going. It was just a two-way road, and there was a sign that said no services for a certain amount of miles. So we knew we were going into quite a desolate part of the desert. And here we were. You know, five young girls, never really experienced anything like we were going to experience, and never have. But about an hour into the desert, we were getting tired. A few of us were asleep. The driver, my friend that was driving, said, "What is that up ahead? There's someone off to the side of the road." And we one at a time woke up, and the minute we started looking at it, we all got the most horrible feeling. It was just an awful feeling, and we couldn't figure out what was going on. As we got closer, she slowed down, and we noticed there was a woman off about maybe 10 feet off of the road. She had white hair, long white hair, white skin. this long, flowing white robe, a dress, holding a white dog on a chain. In the middle of nowhere, Art, we had not even seen any cars for a long, long time. There were no, you know, homes, or we had not gone through any towns. And as we got closer, we realized what it was. And the wind hadn't even been blowing that night, but her dress was blowing, her hair was blowing. And she looked at us with the most evil eyes I have never seen. She didn't look human. Her skin was so pale and white. And she looked at us to the left, and as we went by her slowly, her head turned so far. There's no way any human head could turn that far to follow us. And it was freaky, most
shades,
freaky thing I've
shade,
ever.
Yep, shades of The Exorcist.
Oh, it was just unreal. We were so upset for a long time after that. And every time we get together now, after all these years, we always talk about that white lady in a white dress with her dog in the middle of nowhere.
There you are.
There you are.
There you are. Thank you very much for the call and the story. And what I said, and she just confirmed, is true. Horrendous claps of thunder above Salt Lake, followed by a snowstorm. And if you will go to my website right now and take a quick look at the live studio cam, which normally shows a live shot of me sitting here doing the show, catching me in heaven knows what sort of poses. I've held up the picture from the Salt Lake Tribune showing a witch with a broom partway up a phone pole. And, of course, you'll recall Patsy, harlot, if you will, who was from Salt Lake City, and will be repeated tomorrow night, Saturday night, Sunday morning. You're not going to want to miss that if you didn't catch it the first time. That's really scary. The person included a little caption here of their own that says, "Hey, Art, look at what happened to Patsy the witch the other night." You'll see that photograph up there. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you. Where are you?
I'm in Reno.
Reno, okay.
My story is, it actually comes out of the 70s from Bremerton, Washington.
All right, you're going to have to get into that phone and yell at us.
Okay. All right. I kept a bar off and on for the American Legion in Bremerton, Washington back in the 70s.
Right.
And the building that the American Legion is in was originally across the street inside the shipyard. It was a serviceman's club. And back in the 40s, they moved the building from the shipyard across the street to where it is now.
Right.
During the move, there was a man who was crushed under the building. For several years while I was tending bar, anybody in that was in there heard noises. We had secured locked doors. Every once in a while, a door would open.
Mm-hmm.
The alarms would go off. We all got very used to it and decided this was the man who had been crushed, and we nicknamed him George because we didn't know, you know, what his name was. And he was kind of mischievous, but he never really did anything bad. But upstairs in this building is a huge hall where they hold bingo and convention dinners. On a Thursday night, I was tending bar, and the post commander and vice commander were upstairs setting up the hall for a convention dinner for the next night. And they had all the chairs and tables nicely arranged, everything done. And about 11 p.m., they came downstairs to the bar, and I was closing things down. They sat down to have a beer, and we heard a lot of scraping noises upstairs. So they went back upstairs, and a few of the chairs had been moved. And they thought someone was in the building. They looked all around, couldn't find anybody, came back downstairs. I was almost finished closing out, and it was like thunder and scraping, and it was just horrendous noise upstairs. This time, the post commander went up the stairs from inside the building. The vice commander went outside the building up the fire escape, just in case there was somebody there trying to get out. When they got up there, all of the tables had been moved, all of the chairs, the wheelchairs that had been in a storage room, which also was locked, were in the middle of the room. They came back downstairs just white as ghosts.
Sure.
And I didn't even finish putting my money away. We left. locked the building, left.
Wise move.
Yes, I think so. In the morning, they came back to rearrange everything. It was all fixed.
It was all rearranged.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me something.
Mm-hmm.
This is just sort of a what if. But if you died and you found yourself trapped here on Earth as a spirit, in other words, you could move about and do what you wanted to do, but nobody would see you, nor sense you, nor feel you, nor have any chance of knowing that you're even there, save an occasional rattle or something. In other words, you could be a ghost, or you could be a spirit, or you could... What would you do?
Oh, boy.
You're on Earth, you're a spirit, you're among the living, but you're not. What would you do?
That's really hard. First of all, I don't think I'd want to be there.
Oh, no, I didn't ask you. Yeah, but I didn't ask you where you wanted to be. I said, if that was the case.
I think I would like to be the fly on the wall in the White House.
Good for you. All right for you. That's a good one. Any of the rest of you who would like to consider that might do so. If you in effect, woke up dead and found yourself surrounded by the living, but utterly invisible to them, unable to affect their actions, what would you do? Her answer was a pretty good one. Either fly on the wall at the White House. But even that, I suppose, would be boring after a while. East of the Rockies, you're on the air on Ghost to Ghost AM. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning. Where are you?
Well, Elvis says hi.
Elvis says hi. Memphis, huh?
Uh-huh.
All right.
By the way, my wife is very jealous. She says that you spend more nights with me than she does, which I'm a truck driver, and I listen to you all the time. But getting down to brass tacks, it seems as though I've been a magnet all my life for, I don't know, supernatural experiences or whatever.
We'll be all right. Just keep your hand off my knee.
I won't touch it, I promise. I keep both hands on the wheel of traffic most of the time anyway.
Right.
Except those occasional times that I doze off. But
it's funny you should mention that, because that does happen to a lot of truck drivers, doesn't it? And they, even when they don't crash, they fall asleep and they wake up, and there they are still going down the road.
Well, you have mind lapses, you know, which is, it's like, I don't know if you really go to sleep, but
you're sort of hypnotized, actually.
You lose whole towns, you know, like states, you know, towns, pieces of highway.
Yeah, I drive a little Geo Metro, and it's just us Metro people really like hearing that about the giant 18-wheelers. Anyway, go ahead with your story.
Okay, when I was 12 years old, my father died, and I was born and raised in a very rural area, and we were very, very poor. And I had wondered, after my father died, you know, how we were going to do things. He was 67 years old when I was born, so that can give you some idea of his age.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad always wore overalls and the old A-type undershirts.
Oh, yes.
And he always wore a felt hat and smoked Prince Albert cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up one night, which, you know, a lot of people say that it was, you know, due to the fact that my father had passed away and all this, and I was wide awake. And my father was standing at the foot of the bed, and he always called me Bubba. And he said, Bubba, he said, don't worry about it. He said, you know, everything will be all right. And ever since that time, I've never felt really scared of being around certain things. But I had rented a house in the northeastern part of Memphis. This had been about 4 or 5 years ago. And I had a roommate. And I would be gone for anywhere from a week to 2 weeks, and I'd come back home, and he'd tell me about these strange things that happened in the house while I was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I came home one time, and he was gone.
He was gone?
He was gone. He decided to leave. So I was at the house for, I reckon, a month or two by myself. And I was dating a woman that had a key to the house.
Uh-huh.
All right, I was in the shower one night taking a shower. The door's locked. There's burglar bars on the windows. There's burglar bars on the doors.
Right.
All the doors were locked. I'm in the shower, taking a shower, and the light switch goes on and off. And I figured, okay, you know,
she's in the apartment messing around.
Right, you know, she's going to come over, you know, and, you know, try to scare me because, you know, I'd heard certain things and felt certain things in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I got out of the shower and dried off, you know, and, you know, just kind of casually walked through the living room and looked around. There wasn't anybody there. And there was a time when, in the springtime, I had windows that I would open and draw the curtains back and use a ceiling fan. And I woke up one morning about 1:30 or 2, which is nothing unusual, when I went home. And I lit a cigarette and was sitting there smoking it, or laying there. And I felt somebody sit down on a bed. It was a water bed. And there's a mirrored headboard.
Yes.
So I look at the headboard, you know, because I'm kind of curious because I'm the only one there. And there's no one there. But you could feel the bed move. You know, we're talking about a full motion mattress.
Oh, I know. I know. You could feel the displacement of the water. There would be no doubt about the fact that something was on the bed.
Right. There's lumps where there wasn't lumps before.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And like I said, this ghost or spirit, whatever you choose to call it, had never shown any signs of, you know, being aggressive or whatever. And I sat there and finished smoking my cigarette, and I said, look, either get up or lay down, one of the two, but I need to get some rest, okay? Just do whatever you got to do. But, you
know. Now, that's hard to believe. I mean, you have something on your waterbed, and you're telling it, look, either get up or lay down because I'm going to sleep. How could you do that?
Well, the thing is, this, you know, we heard things. I sat there and played hide and seek with it one night.
Yeah.
You know, this thing.
Well, I guess people react very differently to these things. That's all.
Well,
like
I said, ever since my father had passed away and I had seen him, I have never felt as though they were bad. Now, you know, of course, I've never had knives fly through the air or, you know, wake up with my head and, you know, under a guillotine or things like that either. But I have never really felt that they were bad. You know, it's always been, you know, like, okay, you know, they're here, I'm here.
Anyway, what happened?
Well, I felt the bed move again. I put the cigarette out, and I slept with one foot out from underneath the sheets.
Ha!
And I, you know, got my nest made, and I'm laying there, you know, just going off into dreamland, and something reached down and grabbed my ankle and shook it like, okay, you know,
oh my God.
I'm up, but, you know, I've had the last say. But these were things that not only I experienced, but the lady that I was dating experienced, my roommate. As a matter of fact, he still lives in the house, which I've moved out of. I have since gotten married, and my wife was sitting at the computer one night playing solitaire, and
It's still going on, let me guess.
Yeah, our daughter was laying in the bed and laying on the floor. She had an overnight friend come over. My wife was sitting there on the computer, playing on the computer, and she kept hearing my daughter say, "We're going to leave my foot alone." And she thought this young
You've got a ghost with a foot fetish.
I think that's what it is.
All right, well, listen, I've got to go, but that's great. I just can't imagine. I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I believe that. Now, I realize people react differently to different things. I've got a waterbed. It's not free flow. It's baffled. But I'll tell you right now that if something jumped on, sat on, laid next to me on the waterbed, there is no way in hell that I'm going to sleep. No way I'm going to sleep. And then it grabs his ankle, and he's still going to sleep. I can't buy that. Even for Bubba, I can't buy that. There's just no way. There's no way an unseen force grabs your ankle on a waterbed, and you're gonna go back to sleep. I don't think so. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
How you doing, Art?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I got through. I can't believe it. Great, man. This just happened to me the other night.
All right, where are you?
I'm out of Paso Robles, California.
All right.
KPRL.
What happened?
Oh, man. You were talking the other night about a door slamming or, you know,
oh, no,
a strange noise.
No, big bang on my door, yes.
Yes. Yeah. What time was that approximately, you think? Was it 12:30, 1:30 over there in Nevada?
It seems to me it was like between 12:30 and 1, but I don't remember precisely. It scared the hell out
of
me.
You know, that night, something happened to me. I was in my shop. I like to work on rocks and jewelry and stuff, you know, when I'm off in the evening.
Sure.
And I like listening to you once in a while.
Sure.
And I was listening, and you said something about that. And all of a sudden, I heard a thump. I mean, it must have been like after midnight, because that would be Hallow.
That's right. That's right.
Eve.
It was all Hallow's Eve. That's right.
And I heard it creaking, and the lights kind of were starting to, like a power surge or something.
Yes.
And I looked to my right, and here is this object that is just hanging by its neck. And its neck
what?
About, stretched out about a foot long.
What?
Yeah.
And I mean, well, when you say object,
transparent.
You mean like a being?
It was hanging there looking at me, watching me. I felt this...
Like presence. A human or what? What is the
yes,
face?
Yes, it was. It was a an old man.
An old man, and his
yes.
neck was stretched out.
Yes, and I mean, I like looked at him and I said, you know, I don't mind hanging around or with you or whatever, but you know what? It's your pad. Just leave me alone and you can hang around all you want.
All right, well, I find that as hard to believe as a guy who went to sleep with the... with the something or another in his waterbed grabbing his ankle. If I saw a man's head stretched out, old man's head stretched out in front of me, hanging in midair, I'm out of there. From the high desert, this is Ghost to Ghost AM.
International callers may reach Art in the Kingdom of Nye by first dialing their access number to the USA, then 1-800-893-0903, 1-800-893-0903, and you may fax Art by calling area code 702-727-8499, that's area code 702-727-8499. Please limit faxes to one or two pages. Now again, here is Art Bell.
Once again, here I am. Good morning. Yes, the tradition continues into the night dark hours as we tell ghost stories. And there seem to be plenty of them out there. As I told the earlier audience, one might easily dismiss any single story or laugh it off or chuckle it off with a nervous little laugh. But collectively, just keep listening. Now, back to our lines. I do have one thing that I feel I should read you. I have received, you know, over the last couple of days, countless communications from police officers and those kinds of people, and most of them beg me not to read them on the air because they would be identified. Here's one who will allow me at least to read it. It reads, Dear Art, I thought I'd take a second to send you a fax concerning several ghost sightings in our area. I am a Border Patrol agent who wishes to remain nameless, of course, as my career might be adversely affected. During the past few years, we've had the misfortune of losing two of our agents in the line of duty. In both circumstances, they died by falling off cliffs in our area here in San Diego. In these same locations, several illegal aliens have also died trying to enter the U.S. One night I was working in the same area where one of our agents died. It was during the middle of the night. A thick fog was beginning to cover the valley floor and move toward my location. When the fog came and surrounded my area, A feeling of dread came over me, and I began to get very uneasy. As I was preparing to leave the area, I saw what I can only describe as several shadowy figures running through the fog, being trailed by another about 25 yards behind it. I immediately called to other officers to see if anyone was pursuing these aliens. I didn't get any answer, so I moved toward the area where I had seen these figures and began to check the area for the presence of aliens. I knew they couldn't have gone far, as there were cliffs on three sides of me, and I was covering the only direction out. I searched the ground, found the tracks, and followed them to the edge of the cliff. The footprints stopped at the edge, and not seeing any others in any other direction, I proceeded to the bottom of the canyon, expecting to find the worst. After I went to the bottom, I couldn't find any sign or presence of anyone. I believe what I saw was the spiritual remnants of those lost souls. I know that this is probably the case, as others have told me they've seen similar things. Thanks for your time, and please don't use my name on the radio. Okay, I shall not, though you did give it to me. So there you are. Another case of apparently this endless tape loop business as it regards spirits. You can easily imagine that border agents or aliens who had literally run off a cliff would experience a quick, violent, horrible death, and that somehow that death would be repeated endlessly in this horrid little tape loop that appears to accompany some spirit presence. Quite a story, and one of just many that I get from law enforcement. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Connie from Redding, California.
Hello, Connie.
Hi. Am I on right now?
You better be, or we're in trouble.
Okay. Well, I moved in with my boyfriend and his grandfather, as he was living with his grandfather before in the house.
Mm-hmm.
His grandfather died on the couch in the front room. Okay, well, I move in with my daughter at the time. She's about 11 years old. And we've been here a while. And she was sleeping in the bedroom, which the door, open door to it, and her bed would be, you know, where she'd be lying. If she sat up, she could see into the front room.
Mm-hmm.
And Grandpa, we still had some of the furniture, you know, from them. And he had a recliner chair, and it was, and I rearranged it anyway. It was sitting to where if she sat up in bed, you could see right to it. Anyway, she had never met Grandpa, and I've never met him. The next day, I get up, and she says, "Mom, I had a bad dream last night." And I said, "You did? Well, why didn't you wake me up?" And she said, "Well, because I sat up, and I was scared. I sat up and looked up, and there was an old man in the chair, and he said, 'It's okay, honey.'" And he was from Arkansas, and he talked, "It's okay, honey. Just go back to sleep." And I said, "What?" And I said, "Joey," that's my boyfriend, I said, "come here and listen to this."
Mm-hmm.
And so she explained it to him, and Joey said, "Well, what does he look like, Jamie?" And she described him to a T, because he wore sweat suits all the time because he had lost a leg, you know, and it was easy for him to wear, and he was old. She described his gray sweatsuit and described his looks to a T. But she didn't feel scared of it. And, you know, we thought that was weird, but I'd never gotten scared feelings of any of this.
Sure.
That other guy told you earlier.
Yes.
And
I find that just incredible. I know.
I don't know how to really explain it. Like, well, like that guy said, now someone sat on the bed like that, you know.
Or grabbed your ankle.
Or grabbed or something.
Come on, folks.
That would freak me out, I'm sure.
Would you go to sleep?
No.
No.
That's why I called her. I thought it was so weird, and she explained it. Well, then one night, I don't know how far in between, within the same, 6 months or a year, nobody was home. I was pregnant, so I went to sleep, took a nap, and I woke up because I knew everybody was gone for the day. And I woke up, and the reclining chair, Grandpa's chair, was one of the kind where if you want it, the foot thing to come up,
sure, you got
to
lean back.
Well, no, it doesn't come up by leaning back. You have to grab that wooden handle on the side of your chair.
I know the type, yes.
Right, and it makes the noise, right?
Yes.
And I wake up to hearing that noise up and then going down.
Yeah.
Up and down.
Oh, no.
And I thought, what? And I got up. Everything was the same. Nobody had been home. And there the chair sat. Just fine. But I still, honestly, you know, I knew that's what I heard. I mean, wasn't dreaming, I was wide awake, but I didn't fear to have scary feelings. I just thought, that's Grandpa.
All right, here's the question for you that I asked another young lady a little while ago. I thought a good one tonight. If you were to wake up tomorrow, dead,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't realize it right away, but soon, quickly, you would realize nobody sees you, your body's lying dead on the bed, you died in your sleep. You're walking around, you're still on Earth, you can see everybody else, they can't see you, you can't touch them, you can't affect them, except perhaps in some minor haunting way.
Right.
You know, just the way we've
like
been
here.
Like the
one you asked the lady that was a bartender?
That's right. My question is, what would you
I was hoping you'd ask me that. I was going to add to that.
Yes.
You know what I would do is similar to what the guy did, the lady that was the bartender story, about three stories before mine.
Right.
The way he moved the furniture, and they all left, and the next day, when they came back, it was put back. Some way of making a point, but not to really scare anybody, to let them know I was there.
That it was you.
Yeah, you know what I mean? In some kind of way, just because it would be frustrating not to be able to, you know.
All right. You have then answered the $64 million question. We get so many stories about people who have done exactly that. That's why I thought I would ask, because it is the logical thing that a spirit here on Earth would do, try to find some way to assure those who are left behind who would know the signs that it's them.
Yeah, just some, I mean, it didn't have to be evil or anything, just to let them know, you know, no, it's not something you're mad, no, it was, you know, that's something.
I appreciate your call. Hey, you see what I mean, folks? When you reverse the question, and you apply it to yourself. Now you understand why we get the stories we get. Now, granted, there are other classes of very evil presence, poltergeist activity and worse. But in the majority of so-called ghost stories, it's dear departed ones that are leaving some sort of sign that indicates to the person receiving it beyond any shadow of a doubt that they are present. So you try and answer the question yourself. If you literally woke up dead, found yourself unable to affect things in any real material way, what would you do? The answer tells you why we're getting the kinds of stories we're getting right now. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Where are you?
I'm in North Louisiana. I'm a truck driver, lives in Denham Springs.
All right.
Louisiana.
All right, good.
This is kind of an ongoing story here. It started when I was about 15. First started dating my wife. We lived in a roundhouse. The ceilings didn't go all the way up to the roof.
Uh-huh.
She was in my bedroom. I was in the living room.
I've seen round houses. They're neat.
Yeah, well, they had one on the Gulf Coast, but it was a round fiberglass house.
Uh-huh.
And she was in the bedroom. And she kept saying, you know, stop that, stop that. And then she turned around, and when I seen her from the living room, she kind of got scared. And I said, well, what's wrong? She said, well, something was hitting me. Something kept bumping my leg.
Mm-hmm.
So that went on a couple times in that bedroom, in that house. And I told her that was just Charlie, our ghost. I named him Charlie. And we got married.
It didn't upset you that Charlie was messing with your wife's legs?
No, we wasn't married yet.
I see.
But we got married, we moved out, went into one trailer, and nothing happened. The second trailer we moved in, he came back. Mm. Moved things around, he'd hide things, and he bumped both of us. Mm. And then we moved out of that trailer. We was living in New Orleans at the time. Then we moved to where I'm at now.
But didn't it occur to you that Charlie was not in one place, but rather was with you?
That's what we've done figured out. He must be following me.
This took several moves, though, for you to figure it out. Okay.
And we're in, like I said, we're in Denham Springs now. I've been here 5 years. And about the last 2 years, he's been showed up again.
So you've got Charlie back again.
I got him back. I got an 11-year-old daughter now.
Was this your wife's first marriage?
Yes.
She never had any old boyfriends named Charlie?
No, that's just the name I picked out of the air. I don't forget where I even got it from.
All right.
Think some TV program. But I have an 11-year-old daughter now. I found out today, that's why I called you, I found out Friday. Tuesday night, she was taking a bath, my daughter, and something grabbed her on the shoulder and actually left a mark on her shoulder.
Oh, my.
And we told her that, you know, it must have been Charlie. That's the only thing we could figure out. And then my wife also told me last week that her and the daughter were sleeping in my bedroom because I work nights. And she woke up, and there's a nightlight in the living room that shines through the doorway.
Yes.
And she saw a figure there. And the dogs were in the bedroom, and she woke up, nothing said anything. The cat went running to the other room, and she said the figure just kind of went off. And she went looking through her house and couldn't find anything. So apparently Charlie's back again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
How do you feel about this? I mean, is it something you're willing to put up with, or do you want Charlie to move on?
Well, he doesn't really bother us. I mean, I kind of get a kick out of him. He's just a little annoying every now and then when he makes, you know, moves stuff and you can't find it. The only thing I'm worried about is with the scratch on my daughter's shoulder, I hope he doesn't get a little more physical like they had that one on the television program.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, good luck to you. And, of course, if it gets too bad, you're going to need to consult an exorcist. Now, there's a big dividing line between a little caress on the leg or a push and something that begins to leave marks. When it leaves marks, then you need to begin to think about professional assistance in the form of a priest, an exorcist, something. Because perhaps like a lion that gets a taste for human beings, you know, it doesn't get better, it gets worse, and you've got to eliminate that lion before it gets to you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't push the button there. East of the Rockies, now you're on the air. Hello.
This is Joy from Wisconsin, Dells, Wisconsin.
Hello, Joy.
My husband and I and our two little kids lived in a house, an old farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many things that happened in this house. One of them was I was sitting on the couch one night, and from out in the kitchen, a voice said, just as clear as day, "Hi, Joy."
Hmm.
I left that night.
Now, see, that's sensible.
I took the kid. I had just the little boy at the time, and we left. My husband drives truck at night, and we went to the yard and met him. And one of the other things that happened was above the stove, there's the range hood with the light on it.
Yes, oh, of course.
I used to leave that on at night for a nightlight. And I'd turn it off in the morning, and for a month, every night when I'd go to turn it back on, I'd have to screw the light bulb back in. My husband, I think, thought I was nuts until he was home one night, and I had to do it. We never turned the fan on, so it somehow unloosened by itself. One other night, I was sitting in the living room, and I had emptied all the trash bags into one big garbage bag, and no windows were open, and the bag moved, and you could smell perfume.
Hmm.
Now, the big thing is, in January of 96, we had a fire in the house. And we called the fire department, 7:30 in the morning, got everybody out, called the fire department.
Only got a few seconds left.
Okay. First fireman that came out said, you're going to lose your house totally. Everything is going to be gone. We got nervous. Firemen started coming out, and they saved everything. All that burned was the furnace. The furnace was a tan color. In the furnace, after my husband and I went down there, there is a face burnt perfectly into the furnace.
Oh, my God.
We took pictures of it. It looks just, you can see the
eyes. If you have photographs of that, send them to me.
How do I get them to you?
All right. You listen after the break, and I'll give my address, but I really want those photographs, all right?
I will get them to you.
All right. Then you get a paper and a pencil, and after the break, I'll give my address, okay?
Okay.
Thanks for the call. A face in the furnace. We'll be right back.
And now back to the best of Art Bell.
A little earlier, I asked the general audience, a couple of callers, but the general audience, what would you do if you, in effect, woke up one morning dead? Single, married, wouldn't matter. Family nearby, not, wouldn't matter. You wake up, you get up, and you realize as the day wears on, nobody can see you. You're not part of what's happening anymore, only you're still there. You're dead, but you're here on Earth. What would you do? It's a very, very intriguing a question that leads to all kinds of conclusions about what you hear when you hear ghost stories. Well, here's another answer. Art, I would look for one of those pretty teenage girls, preferably Scandinavian or Hawaiian, and just kind of hang around with her. And perhaps on occasion, give her the impression that she has supernatural powers. Oh, boy. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. This is Mike. I'm calling from L.A. I used to live up in the Truckee area that's near Donner Pass where the cannibals were.
Oh, yes. When you say cannibals, be kind, because, of course, they were not cannibals by choice.
Right. They were nice cannibals.
Well, they were cannibals without any other choice. We dealt with that one night. If you were stranded, if you were going to die, and the only choice was to eat or not eat, what would you do?
I wouldn't eat people.
Yeah. Well, you say that now.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, I've got a good story. Yes. I lived up there, and I didn't believe anything. I wasn't going to call you tonight at all. I said, these are a bunch of hoo-ha stories.
Mm-hmm.
But less than a year ago, it happened to me, and I heard two of your other callers, two big guys, feel something moving on their bed.
Yeah, here
alone.
We go again. Hee-haw stories until it happens to you, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in any of that stuff. But I was home alone. This went on over a span of about 2.5 weeks, and it was during the day because I had taken time off work. And I wasn't when I was sleeping, and it wasn't during the dark. It was in the middle of the afternoon.
Yes.
And I'd be taking naps. It would be I waking up from a nap, and there was that paralysis that I've heard you guys talk about before.
Yes.
And the paralysis, and somebody would sit on my bed. Well, it's just me. Doors locked, windows locked, dogs outside. And this went on, and I could, if I just moved a muscle, the thing would go away, and then that was not a problem. But it culminated after about 2.5 weeks, one afternoon, this is absolutely the truth, is something sits on my bed. And I was more conscious, more aware of it than ever before. And I remember the time of day, the sun was out, no problem. And I had just been taking a nap, and I'm wide awake. There is a woman reclining on the side of my bed on the corner. And I go, oh, I am in trouble now. Because I'd never seen a ghost before. And this was for real, for real,
sure.
For real.
No, I hear you.
I jump up out of bed, shoot for the back door. I've got my hand on the deadbolt, open the deadbolt, open the door a crack, and I look back at the bed, and she's right, but she's talking to me in a man's voice. And she says, pull them out. Well, I knew what she meant, even though it made no sense. And I feel with my right hand on the top of my head, and there are three nails, old rough nails, that have been pounded into the top of my head.
Oh, my God.
And when I look back at the bed, my body is laying in the bed. And I'm looking at her laying next to me, and I'm going, oh, geez, Louise. Well, I knew enough, and you'd actually said it about 15 minutes ago, never make a deal with the devil.
Yes.
And I realized, okay, I knew enough that this is some kind of demon or some kind of devil or a soldier or something. If I pull them out, then I'm acknowledging. If I run out of the house, then I'm not dealing with it. So I just said, hey, I've got to face this now, or this is going to go on forever. And I didn't want to move. But anyway, I just looked over, and I said, I realized that moment, just in a moment of clarity, I just looked at this woman, and it was a woman talking like a man, which was scary, and I said no. And I just remember walking back and laying back down into my body, and it never came again. And that ended it.
Wow.
But it was as real as anything.
At the very least, you should have followed up with a tetanus shot.
Well, I moved. But anyway, I got out of that house. If I had woke up dead, I would book a flight on 800 and then go find a psychic forensic engineer to call you and tell you what really happened.
Well, that would imply, of course, that you could travel in time as a dead person.
Well, hey, you didn't say I couldn't.
You're absolutely correct. I don't make the rules. Thank you very much
for
the call.
Take care, sir.
Right. Everybody else has a hokey story, but here he wakes up with three rusty nails driven into his head and a young lady on his bed to give him instructions in a man's voice. Righto. Okay, on my international line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hold on. Let me get rid of the echo here. Let me see if I can get rid of the echo. Good afternoon. Where are you, pray tell?
I'm in Taiwan.
You're in Taiwan. Oh, no
yes,
kidding.
Yes, a town by the name of Kaohsiung.
Kaohsiung. Kaohsiung, Taiwan. Where is that with respect to...
Taipei?
Yes.
It's south.
And what are you doing in Taiwan?
Well, I came down here for a wedding. My name is Bill, and I live in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Normally.
Normally. But I have been traveling to the Far East for quite some time.
Well, Taiwan is a beautiful place, that's for sure.
It is a beautiful place, and it is growing like the Far East is.
I know. Anyway, do you perchance have a ghost story for us?
A ghost story?
We're telling ghosts. You see, back here, it's Halloween.
It is Halloween to there. Last night it was Halloween here.
That's right. Yes, that's right. It's afternoon there.
Yeah, see, it is Saturday evening, roughly about 4:30 in the afternoon.
Well, that must be pretty rough because it's 12:45 here, so it must be something 45 there.
It should. That's right. Well, my clock is a little over. Yeah. No, right at the present time, I don't have a Halloween story other than the fact that... The people in Taiwan are a little suspicious of what's been going on in Washington, but other than that,
well,
that's
the people
in it's going to get.
I understand. The people in Taiwan should worry more about what's going on in China.
Well, they are because of the way the United States is acting with the premier that came over.
Well, that's right.
But on the other hand, why, it's a growing world, and things will work out.
Well, that's certainly one way of looking at it, but China has Hong Kong back now, and they've got their sights clearly set on
Taiwan.
Yeah, you bet they do.
Unfortunately, I think you're right.
Listen, I really appreciate your call. When are you coming home?
I'm coming home on this next weekend.
This next weekend. Well,
on
it's,
the 9th.
It's quite a flight, and from somebody who just took a 15-hour plane flight, that's me from Europe, I warn you, take every precaution on the aircraft you can not to come home and get sick.
Oh, absolutely. But I take precautions.
All right. Well, you take care. That's all the way from Taiwan. And again, let me give out the international number. If you are somewhere way out there, in Europe or in Asia or wherever, we have a toll-free line. You can call us, and it will not cost you one penny. And the way you accomplish it is you call the AT&T operator. Call your local operator and have her connect you with AT&T. And then tell the AT&T operator you want to call toll-free to the U.S., a special number, which is 800-893-0903. That's 800-893-0903, and you'll get through. East of the Rockies, you are on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
My story takes place outside in the woods. I was coon hunting one fall night, and I was, you know, down in Pennsylvania, you know, where the hills and stuff are. And
is that where you are now, PA?
Yeah, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
Fredonia, to be exact. And my dogs were running up a hill, you know, and they stopped, you know, and they were chasing a coon. And I'm way behind them, and I get up to there, and there's this strange glowing. So I was wondering what it was.
Right.
So me being brave and all, I walk up the hill, you know, and there are six figures, looked like figures, and they were all, like, real low, hardly could hear, like, chanting. to me, they looked so real that I asked them what they were doing. And they turned, they just turned to me and looked at me. So, you know, I was really gung-ho, and I said, you know, I told them to leave, you know, since they were on my property. And they didn't even move. Like, you know, they were looking at me, but, like, looking through me, like, you know. So the dogs, they ran down the hill because they were, I don't know what they were seeing, but I was getting kind of ticked off, so I let off around in the air, you know, and that didn't even faze them. You know, a normal person would be running, you know, if someone was shooting. So I told them, one more time to leave or I'll shoot. So I took and aimed at one, shot him, and after that, they disappeared. I mean, like, it really freaked me out.
Just like gone, huh?
Just like gone, like, it was, I don't go hunting anymore in the night.
I hear that. I very much appreciate your call, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and take care. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Tom from Sault Ste. Marie.
Yes, sir.
Just discovered your show about a week ago. It's very good. I like listening to it every night.
Thank you.
And well, my story starts in Flint, Michigan. We worked at a place called the Capitol Theater. The old theater had a balcony covered over an orchestra pit.
Right.
And they ran a bar in the lobby. And it was known to be haunted. In fact, there was one person that, I didn't believe it, but you know, everybody told me that there was three ghosts that haunted the place. And supposedly it was built by the Masons several years ago. And a lot of the architecture seemed to add up to sixes and threes. So it kind of had an eerie place to begin with.
The poor Masons. The Masons have everything leveled at them. Now ghosts.
Well, that's what they say. I don't know a lot about the Masons, except that both my uncle and grandpa are. But my uncle just died, and I haven't had much chance to talk about it with my grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to play laser tag in the theater part. It was mostly, closed down.
Right.
And we'd actually play through the whole area, and the lobby area was somewhat lit up. This is after hours, after the bar had closed. This was all the bouncing staff. And I'd seen one guy, he kind of protected the place.
Yes.
You'd catch him out of the corner of your eye, and everybody said it was a guy that used to work there, and his whole place was night security. And you would catch him every once in a while, you could see him around. So that kind of got me interested, and I thought, well, you know, maybe there is something to ghosts. And while we were playing laser tag, I walked into the dark area, and I could feel something, like, right behind me.
Yes.
I thought, okay, you know, one of the other guys are stalking me from behind.
Sure.
And, I was kind of hiding my lights on my laser tag so he couldn't see me very well. And I could hear footsteps, and I could feel breathing. And I stopped, and it stopped. I was like, okay, he's right close. I looked around, I didn't see his light. I was like, well, he's got to be in here. So I started walking again. I could hear the footsteps, and then the breathing over my shoulder again. And I'm getting a little spooky because I can't tell anybody, so I stopped real quick, thought the person would run into me.
Yep.
Nope, nothing hit me, except it all stopped again. So I thought, okay, I'm getting a little scared now. And I had a flashlight with me, but the rules of the game was you don't use it unless you're caught in a bad situation.
Yes.
Didn't want to do that. And I started walking again, and the dark eeriness just kept getting worse and worse. And it seemed like the actual darkness of the room was getting darker.
Mm-hmm.
And I look over towards the balcony. I thought I saw somebody's light, so I pulled my gun out and shot at it, and never got a return, like a hit noise.
Yes.
And I thought, okay, well, if somebody's in here, they'll shoot at me. So I just held my gun up to be shot at, you know, so they could see the light.
Right.
Nobody shot. And so now I'm really scared. So I turned my flashlight on and shined it up towards the balcony where I saw the light.
And?
And it was a guy smoking a cigarette, and he proceeded to tumble off the balcony onto the main floor.
Oh, my.
And then just disappeared.
Disappeared?
Disappeared.
Fell and disappeared.
Fell and disappeared. So I'm really freaked out now. And I ran back into the lobby part and tried to find some of my friends. Found them, and they said, oh, you've met the usher.
The usher?
The usher had supposedly died in the building. Mm-hmm. And he'd either fallen off or been thrown off. It was never really decided.
Huh.
And he tumbled over the balcony in that way in years past.
I see. And so there we have yet again, folks, another repeating tape loop type entity presence. How can you listen to all of this and doubt? Do you think we remain? Do you think we come back again and again and again?
I was a highwayman. Along the coast roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The masters hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
I was a sailor, I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft to furl the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still.
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, dial Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
The following is from the Electronic Telegraph. It is UK, United Kingdom News. And I'm going to read this to you. It says, Patients Near Death See Visions of Hell. By Robert Matthews, science correspondent. Terrifying accounts of gravely ill people who claim to have been dragged to the very gates of hell by demons are now to be studied scientifically for the first time by a British psychologist. The existence of so-called near-death experiences, or NDEs, in which dying people report having mystical sensations before being resuscitated, is now widely accepted by doctors and scientists. Their cause is unknown, but they typically involve the feeling of deep peace, followed by a sensation of floating up through a tunnel toward a bright light and into a beautiful kingdom. But it is now becoming clear that for some people, NDEs are very far from blissful. Instead, a feeling of floating upwards, they report being pulled down toward a pit inhabited by demons. So there you go, folks. I've been waiting for this one, and typically, when you talk to somebody who has had an NDE, nearly always they will tell you, oh, there's no bad experiences, and you will ask NDE researchers, well, have you ever heard of anybody going anyplace not so pleasant? And sometimes they will, I mean, very occasionally they say, well, I've heard some rumors or a couple of reports of that kind of thing, but basically no. And I always felt that that was more or less baloney. And this story confirms that fact. There are many, apparently. Now, obviously, people don't talk about that. I mean, if you had an NDE and you went down instead of up, you might do a lot of internalizing about it. You might change your lifestyle. You might do a lot of things. But one thing you probably wouldn't do is tell the story publicly. Well, I had an NDE, only I went to hell. No, you wouldn't talk about it. And I always thought there would be a bunch of those, because there are a bunch of not-so-nice people around. But they just don't tell the stories. Here is proof that I was right. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Terry in Colorado Springs.
How you doing?
Good. I have a ghost story. It's not a scary story, but it's a ghost story.
All right.
My mother died in March of 96. And my first, the birthday afterwards of mine, you know, I was real sad that, you know, she wasn't going to be around. And she always made a point of calling her kids on their birthday. Even if she had to track them down at work, she always called.
Right.
And so the night before my birthday, I was kind of sad. And I was like, come on, Mom, just something. Show me that you're still around. And the next day, I, you know, went about my day and, you know, wasn't thinking a whole lot about it. And I went to a bookstore, and I was looking through the used books. And there was a book there that I had been wanting for quite a while, for like $5. And I thought, oh, how neat. And went to another section and found another book that I wanted, very cheap. And bought them, and off I went to my sister's house. And I'm thumbing through this book, and something flies out of it, you know, like a paper or something.
Right.
And I reach down and I pick it up off the floor and I turn it over, and it's a photograph, an old photograph, black and white, of this little girl, about five, and this man sitting there with a guitar on his lap.
Right.
Just like my mother's relatives, you know. And I turned it over, and on the back it said, Mary and Willie, October 1955, and October 1955 was the month and year of my birth. And I just thought it was her way of telling me that, yeah, I am still around. And
that's incredible. Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, and also the names was Mary, which is pretty close to Terry.
Uh-huh.
And Willie, and my mother's father's name was William.
Now, had that actually been a picture of either you or your mother at a young age, that'd be fall over on the floor.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be. I probably wouldn't be able to tell you about it. I'd be dead.
I appreciate the story. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Say, Terry. Oh, yes, that's pretty good. Give me a sign. How many of you have ever asked for a sign, you know, from up there or even down there, and received one? I've talked to quite a few people already who appear to have. This, of course, would come under the category of being careful what you wish for. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This story starts when I'm about 4 years old. My father had taken me to visit my grandfather, who lived in the woods. My aunt, who was young then, was home from college visiting. And my grandfather lived in a two-story clapboard house, hand-built. There was an old wood stove in the kitchen. There was only two rooms in the first floor, a kitchen and a living room. And in the living room was a coal stove. And I can remember that was the first basic recollection I have of my dad's dad and my aunt. And she was home from college. She had a pair of shoe skates. And they thought it would be really kind of neat to put those on me, and being 4 years old, push me around and such. And
sure.
I didn't know what they were doing. They were putting them on, and I started to cry. And it got kind of turned ugly at that point, and they just looked at me and said, well, look, put him down, let him sit on the couch right here, and we'll go outside, and when he calms down, we'll come back in and push him around. So they walked outside, and I was sitting there sobbing, you know, how a little kid just kind of to yourself a little bit there. And now my grandfather's house, the ceiling was about 7 feet high in this old home, and there was the old paper, wallpaper stripes and flowers and things, and he had an old closet that really didn't have a door but a curtain on it. And as I was sitting there trying to get these skates off, this curtain opened and an old woman walked out. And she was dressed very nicely. She had her hair up in the buns on the side of each of her head. She had a little brooch on her. I had no idea who this woman was. She came up and she never said a word to me. She smiled at me and she helped me off with the skates, and she put my shoes on and tied them. And she tickled me under the chin and made a cooing sound. And, you know, I can't tell you how long this all lasted, but I can remember hearing my dad and saying, well, he sounds like he's quieted down. Let's go back inside. Well, at that point, the old woman walked back towards the closet, pulled the curtain up, walked in, and before she let it fall, she looked at me, smiled, and let it go. boy, I was over there in a flash. Opened it up, and there was nothing in there, just nothing. My grandpa had a couple of suits and things, and that was it. Well, they came in and said, hey, how did you get the skates off? And I started crying again, and I said, this lady came out, and I described who it was, and my grandfather said, it's grandma. And I said, no, it's not, because the only grandma I knew was my mom's mom.
Sure.
And so they got very quiet and let it go. And I can remember as I was growing, as I grew older, I would come to the house and always go to that closet. At 13 years of age, I was upstairs. This had all gone by. My dad was going through his cedar chest. Pulled out an old Army picture. And I was eating an ice cream cone, I can remember, and I just about dropped it. He opened it up, and this... there he was in his Army uniform, World War II, and he had his hand standing up behind this man and this woman. Well, I recognized him. I recognized my grandpa.
Oh, boy.
And the woman.
And there she was.
There she was. Now, the story was completed the day before I was married. All my relatives were visiting at the house, and my aunt from Wisconsin, I told her this exact same story. And she said, do you know why she didn't say anything? And I said, no. She said, she had a lot of grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And she said she couldn't make any sound because she was dying at that point, and cancer had taken her throat.
Oh, boy.
The only thing she could do was tickle her children, and she couldn't stand to hear her grandchildren cry.
Oh, boy.
All she could do was tickle them under the chin and make a cooing sound. And that...
Now, see, that story bothers me for a lot of reasons, thank you, and I'll tell you why. In my own mind, and we discussed this with Brad the other night, Brad Steiger, in some detail, I prefer to think of ghosts or spirits as a sort of weak shadows of their former selves, not really the spirit, not really the soul of the dearly departed, but rather sort of an echo that repeats perhaps endlessly, but is not really a trapped soul on earth. But what that man just described and what many others have described is proactive in the sense that it's not a tape loop, and it would indicate that souls really do remain on earth in some cases. And in a lot of ways, no matter how interesting you think it might be, to be trapped on earth eternally, able to roam, able to do what you want, might temporarily sound kind of neat. But in fact, it would be a living hell. So I don't want really to think that spirits, souls, are trapped here on earth. Why? Because, of course, I could become one of them. So could you. So as you listen to these ghost stories, the easier ones are the ones that sort of would show a repetitive action, like from the Border Patrol officer that I read earlier, not the ones like the one you just heard. A wild card line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello there.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, hello.
Oh, you're talking to me.
Yes, I am.
Oh, terrific. I just heard a slight beep, and that was it.
I heard a beep, too. Where are you?
I'm calling from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
BC, all right.
Yeah, on C-Fun. Anyways, great show. I like that last story because I like to think that spirits are wherever, heaven, whatever, but they can transcend whatever time.
You mean come back down?
Sure, yeah.
Transition from there to here.
Right.
That would be all right.
That would be better to think of.
It's getting stuck here that I'm
concerned
about.
That's right. Yeah, who wouldn't? That would be awful. I've got two ghost stories. My first one...
I can only allow one. Your
That's
best.
That's fine, yeah. All right, I can shorten this one.
All right.
My brother and I both saw it. I was about 4 or 5. My brother's 3.5 years older than me. We came to town, Vancouver here. We weren't living here. And to visit our, godparents. And we'd been watching TV upstairs in the house. Our parents and their parents, like they have kids, were playing canasta in the kitchen. And at that time, 10 o'clock came around, all the good shows were over and all the news came on, so kids weren't interested in that. We decided to go see what our cousin was doing. We called him cousins downstairs. He had a bedroom in the basement. It was an unfinished basement, basically just a rectangle of the house with just two walls built into the corner to make his room. The rest of it was bare open basement. So we go through the kitchen where his parents were playing and had to go down these steps to go down the basement, and we go past them and down the steps. We get halfway down. We look across to where his room is, And there's a ghost, the white shadowy type that you can see through, you know, transparent and all that.
Yes.
Just like Ghostbusters. And he's spying on our cousin. We could see through him. He's a young guy, I'd say now, because I'm thinking about it, in his late 20s.
Do you think he knew that you could see him?
No, this is why it gets good, exactly. There's more to this. So we see a ghost. We can see he's wearing a suit. He's got, you know, a loose style, like old style suit, you know, like the 40s
sure.
or whatever.
Sure.
And he's peering around a door frame, the door frame of entering into the room, as if, you know, he didn't want to be seen, right?
Yes.
Peeking around like a human would.
Sure.
You could see the door frame through him. You know, it's just like Ghostbusters. You see details, but it's all white.
Yes.
But you can see shades of white, right, to differentiate different things. And we could also see part of a dartboard that his left shoulder was covering through him, too. And instantly, I was the first one down the steps. I turned to go up the steps. My brother's looking at me now, and we both yelled, "Ghost!" at the same time, right? And this thing swung around. We surprised it. And we look back at the ghost. He swings around now, and he's looking right at us with his big, wide eyes like we scared it, right?
Yeah, that's a twist on that.
Yeah. And then, so anyways, then he just turns to the very end of the house. He was at one end, and at the other end was a swinging door that went out to a mushroom room that my godparents grew mushrooms, and then out to the backyard into the back alley. Another door went out that way. He just ran for that door, and he just crossed this house in half a second. He went so fast, you could see a blur of legs and arms as he was running. He left a white streak as tall as he was, right from where he started to where he went out this door. And the door, he didn't go through it. It swung open real quick and shut. You know, like, and that was it. He was gone. And we were just about to turn to go back up the steps, and our parents are already at the top of the steps looking down at us, like, what's going on? And we told them the story, and we went out to the backyard, checked out. I guess they assumed it was a burglar that we saw, right?
Sure.
And there was nothing. So that was it. That scared the. It didn't scare us. We were pretty calm about it. It was like, wow, neat, after, you know, 5 minutes after it happened, right?
Well, it is the first instance I've ever heard of human scaring ghosts, and I like it. It is possible. Who knows what makes a ghost visible? And it is kind of nice to think that occasionally, without their knowledge, they become visible, doing their usually invisible snooping, and we catch them. If you can see my studio cam, I've got this really cool, on the island of Rhodes when we were there, Ramona found this really neat, I don't know what it is. It's like a tube with a hand on it. I guess it's basically a back scratcher, although the hand looks a little eerie. And when you turn the tube over, it makes a weird sound. Hear that? And I was having more fun with this thing on the cruise because it makes such an obscene little sound. And I will hold this up so that you can see it on the studio cam. Strange. All right, West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. I'm glad I got through. First of all, do you believe that dogs can see ghosts?
I have a feeling that dogs and cats and animals in general see things that we don't, that move among us. Now, are they ghosts? Yes, maybe. But there's something that they see that we don't. It's obvious. If you watch their behavior, you can tell when they see them.
Well, exactly. And we're having that problem in our house right now.
Oh.
And, well, last December, my wife's ex-husband was killed in a really bad car wreck. And ever since then, we've had a lot of odd things happening, such as our little dog barking at the air and growling.
Well, dogs sometimes bark at the air, but rarely growl. Now, growl indicates presence of something they don't like.
And the other night, I was laying upstairs next to my wife.
Yes.
And I felt a tap on my shoulder, and I looked up, and at the end of my bed, there was a big, dark entity there.
Uh-huh.
And this entity was trying to pull my soul out of my body.
And it pulled your soul.
It was trying to pull my soul out.
Listen, can you hold on?
Yes.
During the break? All right, fine. I'm going to leave you right there. And I keep getting requests to play this, so I shall. This, of course. It's been a tool.
is Crystal Gale.
With no peace of mind, and I'm ready for the time to get better.
It's pretty easy on the ears. Good morning.
Now back to the best of Art Bell.
You are back on the air, sir.
Yes, Art. And another thing, this has let me reevaluate my whole entire life. I thought I was a decent guy, and after this has happened, it has scared the hell out of me. And I'm kind of thinking where I'm going to go after I do.
Maybe it scared you out of hell, actually.
Well, it seriously scared me very bad. And at the same time, we are taking care of his two children that he left behind. One was born after he had died.
Well, there you are. And it sort of bolsters, thank you, the story that I read about the study they are conducting in England. I knew it. I mean, I've interviewed so many NDE researchers, and almost universally they will say, oh no, these are just rumors, you barely ever hear a report of anybody going to hell. I knew that was wrong. I knew it was wrong. I feel it is wrong. Deep down inside of me, I know it's wrong. If there's God, if there's heaven, if there's good, then there is the opposite, the antithesis of that, and there is a hell. And it's about time somebody really began to study that phenomena as they study the other one. So obviously that study is now underway.
And now back to the best of Art Bell.
First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, Art?
All right.
Hey, I finally bought your book, The Quickening.
Congratulations.
Upon arrival back home from work, I had to get some milk and candy for Halloween, so I set the book on the porch table. When I got home, it was gone.
Oh, no.
I live alone. The next day, I overheard a neighbor telling another neighbor if he'd heard of Art Bell. Damn jerk. But
so he took your book.
I think he did, and I'm bent on revenge now. But
well,
I got a story here for you.
All right.
My story happened in Canyon City, Colorado. I was going to school at a religious school.
Yes.
And every weekend I'd go to this nativity shop a couple miles down the road for this, something to do for the sake of diversity. One day in particular, I passed a farm that had a flock of sheep, and the little buggers were kind of cool. I'd never seen sheep before outside the realm of TV. So I observed a sheep was standing in the corner of the fenced-in area.
Are you a city boy?
Yeah, I am.
Must be.
And I observed a sheep standing in the corner of the fenced-in area still as a statue, while the entirety of the other part of the flock was stuffing their face in a typical sheep-like manner.
Sure.
A couple of days later, I saw same thing, flock together munching, strange statue-like sheep on the other side of the field not eating. So the next week, the same thing, but this time the rancher was there. So I asked him, why the statue-like sheep was so weird. Did someone clock in the head or something? It's the darndest sheep, he said. That sheep won't eat in the daytime, only at night. I said, bizarre. He said, you can say that again. It's also scared of other sheep, but product is product, and that's what counts. I said, that's for sure. So that one night I was coming back from the party and I was walking by and I could see a lone sheep, the lone sheep eating or chewing in the moonlight. All the other sheep, needless to say, were sleeping, but I couldn't see the sheep put its head down to a pull of grass or hay. You know, what's going on here? It was kind of really, it was weird.
You mean it was eating in midair?
Yeah, it was eating in midair. It was totally bizarre. I couldn't understand it. So one evening I had just purchased some night vision goggles on the black market for a tidy price, tidy in the sense that it was cheap. I thought I'd walk by the sheep again that night.
I looked
through my goggles as I was approaching the sheep to test them out since it was absolutely dark and there was no moonlight that night to speak of.
Yes.
Looking through the night vision goggles, I had to check my goggles thinking they might be lemons. Because of what I was seeing, I tried again, and there it was again. The sheep was stretching out its neck, standing on its hind legs. There, to my absolute amazement, was this neon green image of an upside-down man holding his hand high, apparently hand-feeding the sheep. And around him were other people walking upside down with an occasional neon image of what looked like dogs.
Wow!
Yeah, this is totally bizarre. I sat there and tried to keep my composure for several minutes until I couldn't help myself. I picked up a rock and threw it at the neon image of the upside-down man feeding the sheep. The rock hit the sheep instead that he was feeding, and the upside down man stopped abruptly. He looked over my way, apparently spotting me. He made some hand gestures to the others that were walking around him, and they all disappeared. When I took the goggles down to start running, I saw several baseball-sized red dots coming at me. I ran as fast as my feet could carry me, somehow lost them hiding in the combine. I stayed there for about 3 hours, with an occasional red dot passing by. After about 3 hours, I got out of the combine and ran, like you would not believe, back to my dorm in complete terror.
Of course. Moral of this story, never throw stones at ghosts.
It's true, too, Art.
I appreciate the story, sir. Thank you. What a remarkable story. And so the sheep, only eating at night, fed by spirits, up on its hind legs, reaching as this. Oh man, what a story. That was great. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I have a ghost story from the journal of my great-grandfather.
All right.
Which I thought you might find interesting. He was a leader in the early Mormon church in Missouri before they even went out to Utah.
Yes.
And he said that he was riding a horse about 100 yards in front of a group of other men. They were together, but he had just gotten out in front of them. And he was about 6 feet tall. He figured on his full-size horse, his head was about 9 to 10 feet off the ground.
I would imagine, sure.
And that's significant because just what happened next is this man or this creature approached him out of the bushes and walked up to him. And this creature or this man, it was a man who was covered from head to toe in hair. And when he walked up to him, they were eyeball to eyeball. And this thing was standing on the ground. And this creature identified himself as Cain, of Cain and Abel, and said that he had been condemned to walk the earth in misery. He was searching for death as a relief from his misery, but he could not find it. And the men behind him saw that he was talking to someone, but they couldn't see who it was. They were, about, like I say, 100 yards behind him. And after a short conversation, he just left and wandered away. And he said his impressions were this is the most miserable creature he'd ever met, the most unhappy, the saddest, and the biggest. And when I read that, you know, it often made me wonder if that is an explanation for some of the Bigfoot sightings, because the description matches. And also the behavior. Bigfoot is huge, but is never threatening to anyone, at least in any of the stories I've heard.
Is there any way you could copy that journal and send me a copy?
Yeah, I could do that.
All right, then listen on the air. And this goes for an earlier caller, which I didn't manage to get my address out for. You recall the picture of the face in the oven? Well, hopefully you're still poised with your pencil and paper. And for you, sir. My address, particularly for any unusual photographs or copies of very ancient journals, like the one we just heard about, fire it off to me, Art Bell, A-R-T, B-E-L-L, just like the one that rings. The address is P.O. Box 4755, 4755, in a town called Pahrump. Not to laugh, as I spell it, that's P as in Paul, A-H-R-U-M-P, Pahrump, Nevada. And the zip code here, the short way to do Nevada is NV, and the zip code would be 89041-4755. You know, the last thing that you would want to see in a furnace would be a face literally burned into the furnace wall. A human face. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Where are you, please?
I'm in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Bridgeport. All right, good. Welcome.
And I wanted to tell you a different kind of ghost story.
It's all right.
I think I know a little bit about the fact that I'm eventually going to be a ghost.
You're going to be a ghost.
Yes. I'm growing up to be a ghost.
Oh, you're quite right. This is a new twist. What makes you think that?
Well, I'm going to try to keep this very tight here. I am a ham radio operator, and of course I know you are.
Yes.
And as you know, we have each of us a call sign.
Correct.
It's like a telephone number. It's got letters and numbers.
Right. It is unique. There is none other to match it in the world, like
right.
Fingerprint, yes.
Exactly. Now, one of the things that, probably every ham, goes through every ham's mind at some point is that somebody might, and they always call it bootlegging, somebody might bootleg his call sign.
Sure.
He might use it.
Right.
Somebody else might use it to make...
Particularly in a way the FCC would frown upon.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I come home from work every day, and I go to lie down on my daybed here, take a nap, and almost every day I would dream that I was down in my basement at my bench with my ham stuff, and somebody's on there using my coffin. And in the dream I'd feel... You know, this time it's not a dream. This time it's really happening. But about 2 minutes later, I'd wake up, and there I'd be on the bed, knowing darn well that it hadn't happened.
Right.
Well, one day I was talking to a fellow about this over the air as it happened, and I told him about it, and he said, "Oh, you know, it's a psychoanalytical thing. You think you're losing your identity, or you feel threatened. Somebody's gonna." you or something like that.
Yes.
And a curbstone analysis, and all of a sudden, this insight came to me, and I said, I interrupted him. I said, "Bob, that's not it. I'll tell you what it is. In my dream, I'm dead, and I'm wherever dead people are, quote dead unquote, and I'm wherever dead people are, and I'm listening to this. I'm hearing a guy." Using my call sign because it's been reissued.
That's right.
No, that happened.
Now, years after, I forget how long it is, but shortly after your death, a year or two or five or whatever, they're able then to reissue your call, yes.
Yeah, and that's just like, it's like giving somebody a telephone number. I haven't got it, as you know. Well, you know, from that time on, I never had that dream again.
Uh-oh.
Ever.
In other words, that realization stopped the dream, which means it's true, which means it's really going to happen, which means you will be a ghost.
You got it.
Great. Well, 73s.
Okay. 73 to you.
See you later. There's a horrid little ham story for you. He's right. That's a terrifying thought. And that the dream ceased probably means it was resolved, which means it's going to happen, which means he's going to be a ghost. Ah, but all good hams go to heaven. Well, except for a few of them on 40 meters. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello there.
I'm actually on the air, huh?
You're actually on the air, yes.
Well, hello. My name's Anita.
Anita.
And I'm from Sacramento, California.
All right.
And just...
Oh, you know, I was on the air in Sacramento earlier today.
Really, really?
Yes, I was.
Wonderful. You know, you're talking about ghost stories, right?
Oh, yes.
And I was coming home from a Halloween party, and I love listening to your show. And I just had to, call because there was, it's not a scary story, but it's a really special story.
Okay.
And what it was is that I'm single, and I can't have children. And there was an adoption that I was trying to go through, a private adoption, and it was really a scary procedure because the girl kept going, you know, 1 month yes, 1 month no, you know. And so it was just very difficult, and I had really been pondering and wondering, well, should I go through with this or not? And I was laying on my sofa one night. I'd fallen asleep, and I had, you know, I kind of had woken up a little bit. I wasn't really, I was in that daze, you know, that in and out kind of sleep.
Sure.
And it was really strange because I had drifted off again, and I hadn't really been thinking about this too much that night or anything. So it wasn't like I fell asleep with this on my mind, and it was the most incredible feeling. I woke up to a little girl kissing my cheek.
Really?
Yes, and it was just, it was such a physical thing. I could see her, and she had long, pretty long blonde hair, and it was the most loving, it just enveloped my whole body, and it was like, this is my daughter, and she was just wanting to let me know that she loved me and that she appreciated me wanting her so much. And I didn't know whether it was the little girl that I was trying to adopt, or this is a little girl that is waiting for me. And it just, it was just an incredible, from head to toe feeling of absolute
sure.
love.
Any resolution? Any resolution to it yet?
No, not to that. Unfortunately, that adoption didn't go through. But I'll tell you something. If it was that baby, then she knew how much I had been working towards trying to get her, and how much I loved her and wanted her, and it was either a thank you, or it was like I said before.
Either that, or it was a premonition. Now, when you finally end up adopting, which I bet you will.
Well, someday I hope so, yeah.
Yes. If it happens to be the spitting image
of that little girl,
then I'm going to want to get a return call from you.
You betcha. You betcha. And you know what else?
What else?
I have... I've been looking for that. Have you ever heard of the cremation of Sam McGee?
You know I have.
Yeah. Well, I have a copy of that, so if you want me to tell
that. That's the Alaskan story, right?
Yes.
Do you know, that story was told to us when we were in Alaska about 2 or 3 months ago.
Oh, are you serious?
Oh, yes, I'm serious. It's a widely told story in Alaska. Do you think you can tell it fairly quickly?
Oh, yes. I have it right here if you want me to repeat it on this Hallow Eve.
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. Do you want to put me on hold or anything?
No. I want you to do it. Got to do it.
Okay. I am... Here it is. All right. Let me get on this.
Call the wild card lines. Area 702-727-1295. Now you're hitting touchstones. You can't do that.
Oh, no. Accident.
I understand.
Okay. It's called The Cremation of Sam McGee. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was the night on the marge of Lake LaBarge I cremated Sam McGee. Now, Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows, where he left his home in the south to roam around the pole, God only knows. He was always cold, but the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell, though he'd often say in his homely way that he'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day, we were mushing our way over the Dawson Trail. Talk of your cold through the parka's folds, it stabbed like a driven nail. If our eyes would close, then the lashes froze, so sometimes we couldn't see. It wasn't much fun, but the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. And that very night, as we lay packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed, the stars are ahead, we're dancing heel and toe. He turned to me, and Cappy says, I'll cash in this trip, I guess. And if I do, I'm asking that you won't refuse my last request. Well, he seemed so low that I couldn't say no. Then he says with a sort of a moan, it's a cursed cold, and it's got right hold till I'm chilled clean through to the bone. Yet taint being dead, it's my awful dread of the icy grave that pains. So I want you to swear that, foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains. A pal's last need is a thing to heed, so I swore that I would not fail. And we started on at the streak of dawn, but God, he's ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh, and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee. And before nightfall, a corpse was all that was left to Sam McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death, and I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to a sleigh, and it seemed to say, you may tax your brain and bronze, but you promised true, and it's up to you to cremate those last remains. Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. In the days to come, through my lips were dumb. In my heart, how I cursed that load. In the long, long night, by the lone firelight, while the huskies round in a ring, howled out their woes to the homeless snows. Oh, God, how I loathed that thing. And every day that quiet clay seemed to heavy and heavier grow. And on I went through the dogs were spent and the grub was getting low. The trail was bad and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in. And I'd often sing to that hateful thing and it hearkened with a grin. So I came to the marge of Lake LaBarge and a derelict there lay. It was jammed in the ice, but I saw on it twice. It was called the Alice May. And I looked at it, and I thought a bit, and I looked at my frozen chum. Then here, said I, with a sudden cry, is my crematorium. Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit that broiler fire. Some coal I found that was lying around and heaped that fuel up higher. The flames just soared, and the furnace roared, such a blaze you seldom see. And I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal, and I stuffed in Sam McGee. Then I made a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why.
Hold it right there.
Walking down the street, pretty woman, the kind I like to meet, pretty woman. I don't believe you, you're not the truth, no one could look as good as you. Mercy.
To fax Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye, dial area code 702-727-8499. That's area code 702-727-8499. Please limit faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and we are now going to go back, and we are going to hear the remains, so to speak, of the cremation of Sam McGee. A promise made is a promise that must be kept. And here was this fella lugging the remains of Sam McGee until finally, in the cold and the wind-whipped cold of the Alaska tundra, he found a location where he could cremate, as promised, the remains of Sam McGee, who was terrified of being cold, even in death. And so I suggest we pick up the Sam McGee saga at about the crackling point as he was being... as he was being cremated, so pick it up there.
Okay. Then I made a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why. And the greasy smoke in an inky cloak went streaking down the sky. I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear. But the stars came out, and they danced about ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, I'll just take a peek inside. I guess he's cooked, and it's time I looked. Then the door I opened wide, And there sat Sam looking cool and calm in the heat of the furnace roar. And he wore a smile. You could see a mile. And he said, "Please close that door. It's fine in here, but I greatly fear that you let in the cold and storm. Since I left Plum Tree in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tells that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the clearest they've ever did see was the night on the marsh of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee."
I thank you for that, my dear.
Thank you.
They told us that when we were in Alaska. It's a fine tale indeed, and might be true. Back now to our ghost stories and our callers. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
All right.
Where are you?
I'm in Kentucky.
All right. Turn your radio off there in Kentucky, and
I'm leaving the room. Is that okay?
Well, I guess it's an option.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So anyway, what have you for us?
Well, I was hoping you can help me with something. When I was 17, right before I went in the military,
uh-huh.
I went to visit my grandfather, say goodbye, and I was asleep in my uncle's room. It was pitch black because he's on the mountainside, and he had windows boarded up from the rocks sliding down through it. And I woke up tingling all over. Had a tingling sensation.
Yes.
And it woke me up. And I noticed something at the foot of my bed.
What?
Well, at first I thought it was a coat hanging on the coat tree there. And the more I looked, the clearer it got. And it was a person, and it was white. And the robe it had hung just like drapes hang.
Yes.
And I started making out the hair, and I couldn't tell if it was male or female.
Yes.
And when I finally realized it was really something at the foot of my bed. It was like a side view. I raised up and I said, "Who the hell are you?" And it turned and it looked at me just like it piercing right through me with his eyes.
Yes.
And, well, it didn't scare me a bit. I thought, well, how about that? And I laid back down and I got up the next morning and trying to tell my grandfather about it, and he got mad. Said, "Boy, you trying to tell me my house is haunted?" And left the breakfast table. Well, I went down to my aunt's, and I told her. She's a very religious woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Lowell, if you ever see anything like that again, say in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Be gone, yes.
What do you want, and then we'll talk to you."
Well, look, I hate to cast the shadow of skepticism on your story, but I refuse to believe that anybody would see a ghost, a spirit, a presence at the foot of their bed, and then would turn around and go to sleep. I refuse to believe that. Now, that may be my own prejudice, I fully admit. But in my case, to see such a thing, to go to sleep, give me a break. The thing I would more likely do to the bed is to wet it. I mean, that would just scare the heck out of me at the minimum. And I sure as heck wouldn't go to sleep. Now, I have talked to no less than 3 or 4 people tonight who have had their ankles pulled, have had presences on the bed with them, and in each case they have said, "I went to sleep." I just can't buy it. Now you think about it. You people who have had some even little thing happen to you, like the big bang on my door the other night, it's still bothering me. And at the time that it occurred, I had an adrenaline rush that could only be compared with, you know, perhaps in encountering a burglar or coming to blows with somebody who's breaking in your house, something like that. And so I find it just totally beyond the realm that anybody would have their ankle yanked on or some apparition at the foot of their bed and go, just sort of slide off to sleep. I have a really hard time with that. First time caller line, you're on the air.
This is Dixie in Houston.
Dixie in Houston. Hello there.
Hello. This is a story that my mother always told about Fort Washita, which was, I guess, a frontier fort just north of the Red River in central Oklahoma.
Yes.
And the story went that an officer caught his wife in a compromising situation with another officer, and he beheaded both of them with his saber.
Mm.
And the story from that day on that if you rode your horse through that area at night, Aunt Jane, which was the officer's wife, rode on the back of your horse with you through the area where the fort was, very few people would get out and ride.
With or without a head?
Without a head.
Naturally. I appreciate your call, ma'am, and your story, and I have always rather disliked headless stories, but they proliferate in the world of ghost stories, headless stories. Bodies without heads. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, I have a book having to do with near-death experiences.
You do?
Yes, I do. It was written by a physician who's not particularly religious, but he had to recount what happened when he would have surgeries on his patients, and they'd come back, in some case, absolutely screaming in terror.
What is the name of this physician?
The name of the physician is Dr. Maurice S. Rawlings, R-A-W-L-I-N-G-S.
I am indeed familiar with Dr. Rawlings. I think, though, that that book was written pretty much from the from a religious perspective.
You know, it might be. It's called To Hell and Back.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I know about it. It's written pretty much from a religious perspective. Now, I find very interesting the fact that legitimate mainstream science in Britain is going to begin studying NDEs that apparently resulted in people going to a place that we would think of as hell. And I'm looking forward to the result of that study.
So what you're saying is that's going to be objective. At the same time, we've got to think that Dr. Rawlings, who said he was near atheist when he started these, may have been scared into becoming a religious person.
Well, that's always possible.
Yeah.
I appreciate the call, sir.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, I am familiar with that book. But I think a good, objective, scientific study, finally, of the phenomena that nobody talks about is definitely in order. And it may be as useful to the religious community to prove there is a hell as to prove there is a heaven. Has that occurred to you? It was kind of interesting the other day when I had, tomorrow night, we will repeat the episode with Harlot Patsy, the devil worshiper. She calls herself a witch, but clearly she worshipped Satan. And in a lot of ways, that program, like a legitimate study of those who have had NDEs that resulted in a hellish experience, really do more for Christianity than they do to hurt it in any way whatsoever. And that was the result. I got so many faxes and so many pieces of email from people who had been so concerned about that show before it ran, but then when they heard it, the end result after the entire program was that those who were religious out there felt it did more for Christianity, terrible as it may have been to hear, than nearly any other program we've done in a long time that simply would have been in some way pro-Christianity. Interesting result to a program of that sort, isn't it? And I think a very similar result would be realized by an objective study of those who have died and apparently gone to hell. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, this is Stu in Phoenix.
Hello, Stu.
Yes, you're familiar with the story of Christine, the 58 Plymouth with a bad attitude?
Oh, they made a movie about it.
Yes. Well, Well, I'd like to tell you there is a counterpart to that car in Peninsula, Ohio. At least there was 25 years ago.
Really?
Yes, I was driving through there one night about 2:30 in the morning, and a car came from out of the darkness behind me and started tailgating.
Uh-huh.
So he was flashing his lights, blowing his horn.
Yes.
And I tried to let him pass, but he wouldn't.
Uh-huh.
So when I got to a stoplight, I looked in the mirror, and I could tell it was a white 61 Chevy following me.
Right.
Well, I knew somebody who had such a car, so I thought it might have been him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the light turned, I turned left, and the car stayed right behind me. When I got to the next light, I was going to turn right, so I pulled in the right-hand lane. The Chevy pulled up alongside of me. All its windows were open, so I looked over to see who was driving. There was nobody driving. There was nobody in the car.
Now, could you even see far enough down on the driver's side to be sure there was nobody hunkered down there?
I was driving an older car, which sat much higher. And I could see the whole inside of the car. There was nobody in there.
A driverless
car.
So
I burned out of there and got about to 110 and a quarter mile, I think. And I went through an S-turn, taking my life in my hands, and lost sight of the Chevy partway through the turn. He was still after me. Well, I waited for his lights to reappear, but they never did. So after about a mile or so, I turned around and went back. I checked all up and down that stretch of road where I seen
it. Now, wait a minute now. You risked your life doing 100 miles an hour to get away from this thing, and you turned around and went back?
Yes. Out of curiosity or wondering if somebody had gotten hurt or what, but I looked all up and down that stretch of road. There was no sign that any car had even been on the road. There was no car on the road or off. No skid marks, no tire tracks, nothing. The car had vanished.
Well, that's a hell of a story.
And I've heard other people tell of similar encounters with a car of the same description.
However, the part where you went back is equivalent to every horror movie I've ever seen where the girl with the low-cut dress inevitably hears thumping, banging, screaming, agony coming from the basement. And where does she go? Down to the basement.
Uh-huh.
Right. And you did 100 miles an hour to get away, and then you turned around and went back. But, you know, in any decent horror movie, you deserved to die.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But I appreciate the story, sir.
Oh, okay.
All right, take care. I mean, anybody who, you know, if that had been a horror movie, he'd have tire tracks going right over his body. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, all right.
Yes.
Hey, I'm calling from Central California, driving a truck. My story involves probably about 100 years ago, comes from my father through his father, and the story goes that my grandfather's great uncle was out hunting rabbits with his brother, and they come across this old lady who lived in the area. They called her Aunt Polly, and so the folklore was that she was a witch. Well, she was out in her front yard, and she was making apple butter, which apparently, I have never made it, but apparently if you, when you make apple butter, it wants to pop and boil over on you pretty rapidly.
Mm.
Well, they told her, they said, Aunt Polly, you better watch apple butter. It's going to get you. And apparently she looked at him and just sort of smiled and says, oh, that can hurt me. And she pulled over the sleeve and stuck her arm in and started stirring it with her arm.
Oh, my goodness. And this is a relative of yours?
Yes, I guess it would be like a great-great-great-uncle.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. Do you ever have strange urgings yourself?
No, sure don't, Art. Enjoy your show a lot.
I appreciate your call, sir.
Thank you.
Be careful on the road out there.
All right.
All right, yep, a lot of truckers out there. All right, bottom of the hour, stretch run coming up. This, of course, is Ghost to Ghost AM.
You're
And now back to the best of Art Bell.
And here we go with the stretch run for 1997 and Halloween. Are you ready? First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Are you there?
Am I here?
Thank you.
Were you referring to mentally or physically?
No. Anyway, hi, I'm Ken calling from Kohala, Hawaii.
Wow, okay.
And I've been listening to your show for a couple months now.
Yes, sir.
And I personally don't have a story to tell you, but I live here in Plantation, old defunct Plantation town in Hawaii. And I live with my parents here, just moved back, and was raised basically here in a home that's over a century old. And basically a story about my mom when I was an infant.
If I might, there should be a lot of Hawaiian stories, because the kind of plantation you're on very early in Hawaiian history was stocked with workers imported from the Philippines and elsewhere that worked very, very hard in those fields, and many of them died in those fields. And I would think that if there were hauntings, there would definitely be hauntings where you are.
Well, the home that I live in, actually my parents' home now, apparently was occupied by one of the mill managers.
Ah.
And the mill's been out for about 25, almost 30 years now. And basically, the home that we're in is haunted. But it goes back and forth. When I was born back in 71, my parents had just bought the home here and remodeled it. And my mom had, my parents had a Great Dane. And as you've talked, the other callers have talked about animals being sensitive to ghosts.
You bet.
We had a Great Dane, in fact, one of the biggest in the state. And my mom was upstairs one night. Alone, my father was out on business, out of state, and she remembers quite vividly the animal, Hina was her name, Hawaiian name, and would get very sensitive at night, and she would get chicken skin and get that feeling like you're in the presence of a ghost.
Yes.
And on one occasion, she walked up the stairs, and we have two cool walking chairs upstairs. There's the three rooms upstairs in this home, and she remembers seeing an image of kind of a aloha shirt or kind of a pattern, an old pattern, with kind of a dark skin. The entity was kind of transparent, but she could see a color, little color of the skin rocking back and forth. And I actually sat down with my mom one night and asked her about one of the infants that had died in the home. Because there had been apparently caretakers in the home and so forth.
Yes.
And she was not receptive to my asking of the question.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother never gets that way. And on occasion, my father has worked and was working one time, as a matter of fact. And it always seems the reoccurrence of ghosts when my dad's repairing a room or something like that. And he remembers very vividly scraping the paint off the one of the roofs and ceilings, and somebody asked him, "What are you doing?" Well, my father threw everything down and looked back and said, "What do you think I'm doing?" And realized that no one was in the home.
I appreciate the story, sir. Thank you very much. That's from Hawaii, and there are indeed many hauntings in the islands. They have a rich, very rich history. And one dreamland, we did an entire program on Hawaiian hauntings. It was very good, and we're going to have to repeat it. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art. How are things?
Things are okay.
They're nice and creepy, I know.
Yes.
I've got the candle lit, the lights are out, and I'm reminiscing about 20 years ago. when I lived in an apartment. My name is Ron. I live in San Rafael, just north of the city.
Right.
And for a long time, I lived in this apartment for 8 years, and eventually my girlfriend moved in and we got married. And that was the last 3 years. Now, I had a waterbed. I was in sales. I'd come home in the afternoon before going back to the office. I'd lay down to take a nap. And there'd be a tugging on my body. Sometimes I would have that pressing sensation.
Yes.
Where you get, like, paralyzed and all that.
Yes.
That, I thought, was just some kind of sleep problem. But then I get this tugging. Like, I was supposed to leave my body and go someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I never saw anything strange in the apartment. Things moved around sometimes, and I thought, well, I just wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. When my girlfriend moved in, then we started having problems with the waterbed. Like, there was a leak, but there wasn't. Emptied all the water out, blew it up with a vacuum, checked the whole thing, there were no holes. Could not figure out what's going on.
Oh.
The flood of 82, we had to move. About 3-4 months later, I talked to the landlord, and I said, well, how are things? You know, you get your place back together? And he says, yeah. And he says, but a strange thing happened. I said, well, what's that? He said, it took about a month to clean the place up. A young lady moved in who was being taken care of by a gentleman who was married. Apparently, she was feeling the same things that we felt, but she ended up committing suicide.
Oh, my.
Now, I didn't know until then that there was a gentleman that had passed away in the bedroom prior to my renting. So his spirit was bouncing around in there. Now there's two spirits bouncing around in there.
So that may have been the flood that saved your life.
Either saved my life or, you know, it was never threatening. It was just, I started reading a lot of OB, out-of-body experience books.
I understand, but I mean, yeah. look at what happened to the girl that was in there following.
Well, I think maybe it's guilt that got her. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And the other thing you've got to consider is the possibility that had you remained, you
might have gotten worse.
Yeah, and
yeah.
You might have ended.
Maybe he was upset that we were living together out of marriage or something. You know, who knows?
You did get married.
Oh, we did, and we eventually got divorced. But that's another story.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it's a horror story too.
Well, there's the other thing of climbing off of Mount Shasta and seeing visions up there, and I knew nothing about that at the time, and I saw this. I thought it was like a guardian angel. And I thought I was going crazy. But I'd hiked off the mountain, dragging a toboggan, and it was a full moon night. And you know how you feel something behind you and the hair goes up?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking Castaneda. Left is death, right is the other way. I'm going left, right, left, right. Okay, make sure you turn to the right, Ron. So I turn around, and on top of this rock, I see this glowing figure. Kind of like the statue down at L.A. for the awards. But the hands are at the side. It's not threatening. And I thought, I'm going straight to Napa. I lost my cookie. I'm going crazy. And so I thought, well, I'll turn around. And I looked at the statue and I said, thanks. I appreciate your help, you know. And I turned around and I walked a couple steps. And I said, I better check one more time. I turned around. It was still there. And the only thing I could think to do was whistle a happy tune and run.
Hey, prior to your divorce, did an entity visit you and advise you to get a lawyer?
No. As a matter of fact, they didn't, because after that, you know, we moved, and I haven't experienced any other crazy things.
All right. Well, I appreciate your stories, plural. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hello. I'm calling from Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Should I give my first name?
Sure.
Let's call myself John. I'm afraid that this story might be too recognizable to a few of...
Okay, John.
Okay.
Everybody now to listen very carefully so we can identify John by his voice. Go ahead, John. Go ahead, John.
Okay. I'm going to explain a little bit of motivation for some of my actions, lest I draw immediate criticism from you.
Okay.
Okay. It involves a friend of mine and I in college. This is about 5 or 6 years ago, and a haunted auditorium. Now, we were both people who, a couple of years before this, had been complete unbelievers in all sorts of different phenomena. He was completely agnostic, and I wasn't sure what I was. But we had all found neat, tidy ways to explain all this away. And then we had befriended this third guy who was involved in the darker side of spiritual happenings and such. And yeah, we had problems that we had a hard time getting rid of. And we were both very interested in different religious traditions, but it was just in a sort of academic way. But we found ourselves sort of making a sort of hodgepodge of different religions and traditions, trying to deal with this new situation we were in, and found them to work. And so this is sort of the stage we were in. It was curious, but you know, we were trying to find answers to things and such, and started questioning, why are we here? What does the spiritual world have to do with us? What are our obligations and such? And there was this auditorium on campus of the college, and it had been a fort during the Civil War. And there had been several major battles on that hill. Mm-hmm. And there had been different stories about that auditorium, and some of them sounded possibly credible, some of them not so credible, and some of them had happened to friends of ours. And so one night we often walked around the campus all night, just talking and that sort of thing, and we would sit up on the hill near the auditorium. It was kind of a gave a kind of nice view of the city. So we decided to go in one night. It's supposed to be locked. It doesn't work very well. I think they've secured it better since then. And
I take it you were going in to test all this.
Sort of going in to test it all, right. And my friend had said that he had been in there and sent some things before, but he was in a stage at the time where he was, you know, just writing it all off as, you know, got myself worked up and, you know, give myself the spooks and such. So he wanted to try it again, sort of. We both been in during the day. It's fine. It's like everything sort of goes into hiding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you first walk in, there's a sort of hostile atmosphere. There's a, it seems like there's a bunch of spirits. And some of the stories that have been circulating were such that musicians and such that practice there for the day to come have experienced such things as hearing the seats move around and looking out and seeing all the eyes, like eyes in the audience in all the seats and that sort of thing. Well, we sat there and I didn't see anything for a while, but there was a feeling that we weren't wanted. But after a while, it kind of settled down. It's like they ignored us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because it's an auditorium and they're, you know, used to people coming and going, but not at night so much. I don't know. But we started watching it. There was a feeling that we should whisper and be very quiet. And we did notice a couple of, I don't know what you call them, motions in the balcony. There would be where there was some like emergency light.
Yes.
Things, a security light or something. And there would be like a black figure of a person would go towards the light and then disappear.
Kind of like you'd catch it out of the corner of your eye.
Exactly.
Yes.
And it was interesting. It was like people trying to walk, but it didn't work right. It's like they thought they were there and thought they were still in their body, but it didn't work right.
Right.
Okay. Now, on the grounds around that auditorium that was where a lot of the killings had taken place, there was actually a trench. I didn't know it was a trench at the time, where I would walk through it and get all sorts of creepy feelings. I wouldn't walk through there at night. I didn't know why. I didn't know why until 2 or 3 years later that was, I didn't know it was a battle trench. But I would get these sort of feelings that the, you know, really dark sort of feelings of death and murder and such. So my friend and I left after a while. We'd had enough. And, after 2 or 3 days, you know, we got to talking about it and felt that we should do something. You know, if this is real, and if those are really spirits that, you know, are left over from the war and such, and you know, I mean, that's terrible. Sort of what we were talking, or what you were talking about earlier, you know, people being trapped on Earth. And
yes.
Civil War was a long time ago.
So what did you do?
So we decided that we were going to try to help them in some way, and so we were thinking of, you know, what do people do around the world to deal with this sort of situation? And the Japanese, and also the Chinese, have something what the Japanese call a no play, where actors take on the roles of the people that are involved in the story, and they act it out. And through that acting out, the ghost sort of realizes that it's the people are aware of it, and it sort of exercises the ghost, and
yes.
It helps it on its way.
So you did that?
We did that, and I'm trying to wrap this up quickly. So we played opposite sides. One was north, one was south, and we got on stage there, and we acted it out, and the highlight is it all sort of became more real than I wanted it to be. I felt sort of silly at first, but I instantly felt like younger than I was, like 15 or 16 or something, and scared out of my wits. Like I didn't know what I was doing. Here I was in the middle of this war, and I heard this voice, which I thought was my friend from across the stage, saying, "Be quiet." And I knew it was my commanding officer, and I was aware of the fact that when he said that, I was whimpering and such, and I felt silly. I felt very immature. And I saw my friend rushing at me across from the stage, and I said, "This is it. I'm going to die. This is the end of my life." And we ran at each other and acted out the rest. Just real short, we shot at each other, and I felt that I had died, and I remembered my wife and knew that there was a child that I was not going to see again.
Wow.
And we got to walking out afterwards, and we felt like we'd really done something. And I said, that actually worked a lot better than I thought it would. I mean, I was getting visuals and such. My friend's like, yeah. And the visuals sort of matched up. And I said to my friend, I think the high point was when you yelled over at me, like, be quiet, because you were, I didn't know what you were doing at first, but I felt that it was my commanding officer, telling me that, get straight, here it comes.
Sure.
And he said, "Do what?" And I said, "When you yelled at me." And tears started running down his face, and my knees collapsed. He didn't do that. He didn't say that.
Oh, my God.
And we didn't go back for a while, but we did want to know sort of if anything had happened. And we did go around that area, and after about a month or so, we managed to get up the courage to go back in. And the atmosphere did seem different. They weren't all gone or anything like that, but it seemed different.
Well, maybe it was minus one or two.
That's what we were hoping.
Maybe you had helped one or two on.
That's what we were hoping. But I thought that was sort of interesting. You were talking about the proactive thing, whether it was a loop or a proactive.
Yes.
I think that some of the spirits are in a loop until something gets them out. I've had another experience, I won't get into it, of course, that seems to indicate the same sort of thing. And that acting that my friend and I did also seems to...
Yeah, the big question is, are these soul spirits actually caught in a loop, in a truly a damned loop to repeat an endless horrible death, or is it simply sort of an echo of what did occur? Not truly a trapped soul, but just an echo. It's a very, very important question.
Well, what our experience seems to indicate, and what a lot of other cultures around the world believe, is that that they are there, but not trapped in the sense that they don't know what to do necessarily, but they're held there. It seemed like some of them still were holding on to the war. I mean, some of them were still, I'm the north, you're the south.
Of course.
Yeah.
Nothing changed from the instant they died.
Right.
Their reality is still then.
Right, exactly.
Well, you did a very strange thing, but but actually a very good thing, and I guess you felt good about it.
Yeah, we did. We felt relieved ourselves, yeah.
All right, well, listen, you have just completed Ghost to Ghost AM with one of the best stories, so I give you the honors. Tell everybody good night.
Good night, everybody.
That's it. Folks, we're out of time. It has been one of the best Ghost to Ghost shows, actually two of them this year. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you all. Sorry we didn't have more time. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night.